Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Thank you everybody for being here today. Happy holidays. First, I'd like to mention that we do have a contested case for the golf course. This is the Mackay Golf Course project, but because we have a pending contested case, we will need to defer this nomination. And then there's a reminder that rules require a petition will need to be filed within 10 days. Is there any questions?
Okay. So two points. So filed in writing.
Filed in writing. Thank
you. And the second point is this is a pending petition.
Yes.
This action does not imply a decision on whether or not that the board is going to grant the petition.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, then we would like to move forward with approving the agenda as advised. Your motion?
Also move.
Bill
seconded.
Bill seconded. Okay, great. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, now approval of the minutes from August 10th, the limited meeting minutes. Is there any suggested edits or comments? Motion to approve the minutes from August 10th.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor of approving the minutes August 10th? Okay. Approval of the minutes of August 11th. Motion to approve. Sorry. Any suggested edits or comments? Okay. Motion to approve.
I'll move.
Thank you. Ralph seconded. Okay, thank you. All in favor? See,
sorry, I was thinking of Madam Chair. Should we introduce ourselves at some
Sure,
point?
We can do that. Now that we're all warmed up. We'll start with you, Bill.
Okay, I'm Bill Chapman, and I've been on, this is my, I forget how many years this has been, but it's going on like, I think maybe 10 years in all, when I was formerly chair, but I'm an architectural historian on the board.
My name is Graham Hart. This is my first year on the board, and I'm an architect.
Katie Stevens, I think this is number 7 year. I'm currently chair. Thank you. Oh, sorry, architect.
Nick Peluso, archaeology, is my first year on the board.
Ralph Cam, first year on the board, historic preservation.
Would you like to introduce yourselves as well?
If you want me to.
That'd be great.
I'm Alan Downer. I'm the administrator of the State Historic Preservation Division. I'm not a member of the board. Here, along with some of the SHPDE staff to provide administrative support.
Mary?
I'm Mary Kadama, historic architect.
Thank you.
SHPDE staff.
Yes.
Hi, Chandra Hirotsu, SHPDE Secretary. Hi, I'm Sophie Katz. I'm an architectural historian with SHPDE.
Thank you.
Been here 17 days.
Welcome.
Congrats.
Great. Okay, we'll move on with the first nomination unless anybody has any other questions. Okay. Thanks. First nomination was deferred from our last meeting, which is the Falls of Clyde.
You want to make a presentation?
We have Jim Delgado.
Okay.
On Zoom.
Sure. And I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that if anybody that's watching on Zoom would like to testify, please put into the chat your name and the nomination that you would like to provide testimony for.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good morning and thank you. By way of introduction, again, my name is James Delgado. I prepared the original National Historic Landmark study for Falls of Clyde during my tenure as the director of the National Park Service's Maritime Heritage Program, then known as the National Maritime Initiative. Very familiar with Falls of Clyde. starting with my days at National Maritime Museum San Francisco, the ship Balclutha, and knowing many of the people who'd worked on Falls of Clyde to both save and restore the vessel and to re-rig it, and then subsequent visits to the vessel through the years. Most recently, I did an extensive tour of the vessel and reviewed it once again and drafted the report that recommends delisting the vessel from the National Register and the withdrawal of its National Historic Landmark designation. The changes to the vessel and the irreparable loss of historic fabric has impacted its integrity to the point that it no longer meets the criteria for listing, nor does it meet the parameters that specify the level and the need for integrity that either listing or designation would confer or would require. The condition of the Falls of Clyde is regrettable. The time, I do believe, has come, and I state this not only as the author of the study and as one who's looked at hundreds of these historic vessels, both in the United States and also internationally, but also as a former museum director with a historic ship where I was for 15 years a steward of another vessel. I'm happy to answer any questions. I would note that subsequent to that, we have been able to go on board Falls of Clyde. We've been able to document the vessel more completely to conclude the National Historic Landmark level documentation that I had commenced in my tenure, with additional large format photography for the Historic American Engineering Record, as well as a complete and thorough LIDAR scan of the vessel, both in its exterior and interior spaces, all of which meets the standards and which will be conveyed to the Library of Congress through the National Park Service's Preservation Program. As well, I conducted a detailed assessment of the vessel in terms of any surviving artifacts or features that, if at the time the vessel is either lost, restored, which I don't think can happen, or needs to be broken up, that I would recommend steps be taken to try to preserve those. That also includes museum quality artifacts left behind that were not recovered or taken off by the Friends of the Falls of Clyde. They did remove the figurehead while I was there doing that inspection, but that's it. So that's basically it. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay, any questions from the board? Okay, any questions from the audience?
Yeah, where is it going? It's lovely inside. The interior was quite lovely.
I was struck by that too when I looked at the pictures, how much there was.
Does H. Don want to respond to that?
It's Scott Easer, HHR planners. I'm a consultant to the State Department of Transportation. We are in the process of preparing a draft environmental assessment that would cover the removal of the Falls of Clyde from Pier 7. There will be a presentation of several alternative methods of removal. None has been selected at this time. Subsequent to the completion of the environmental assessment, which we think will happen springtime-ish in 2024, the department issuing an RFP to remove the vessel. There is no definitive decision on what will happen
at that. I should probably also add that the assessment of the vessel looked very carefully, not only at cosmetic aspects, those parts of what would define integrity, but also very clearly also looked at issues such as structural integrity and what could transpire if, shall we say, Falls of Clyde was to, quote, be restored. The vessel is beyond restoration. To deal with it, it would require nearly complete reconstruction in a number of areas, including large portions of the hull. The vessel is not only severely corroded, but it has lost its exterior layers of its iron plates, which cannot be replaced, which would just simply have to be removed. It is growing bacterial rust sickles similar to those that we have seen on the wreck of Titanic, which is a sign of very extensive deterioration. So it is more than a cosmetic issue. The vessel is in serious trouble. It consistently leaks, not only from rainwater, but from holes coming in and around failed rivets. It is irreparable.
Okay. Any further questions? What's been presented previously or today?
Comments, I guess. Do we do that before or after a motion?
After the motion first.
Yeah. Somebody like to make a motion?
Everyone.
Thank you.
Sure, I'll make a motion to accept the delisting. How do we word that properly?
Recommend
delisting of the Falls of Clyde
from
the National and Hawaii, or just Hawaii State Registry. Got to get my wording right here.
It's unique. We've never had
we
to
don't
do
have
it.
To delist usually.
So it would be delisting this from the Hawaii Register at this point.
Okay.
I don't know whether the HDOT intends to pursue, whether they intend to pursue de-designation as a national landmark. That's a completely separate process, devoid of state involvement.
I won't mention it.
That's something that runs back into a different process and schedule. I don't know if you guys want to comment on that. Not that it really matters, I think.
Do we have comment on that? Yeah, we will. Sorry, my dad's
calling. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm Patricia Delaney Watson, Homeworld Consulting. Also put HDOT on this. We would pursue that process. So it is a separate process that we would undertake. We feel like the State Review Board is the first appropriate step to assess if it has integrity or not at this point. She heard Jim's recommendation. And so we would then, once that goes through this process, we would then pursue separately, as Dr. Downer said, the separate process of delisting from the National Register.
Thank you.
So second, did someone second it?
Well, I cut you off before you second it. Just
sure.
I've got one question. Maybe this is for Jim or anyone else. So say this were to be delisted, and I'm just kind of responding to some of the testimony. Jim, do you have a sense of its potential eligibility under D? I see you recommend some kind of further documentation. Is there still information that it could yield?
Good question. And no, there's nothing that it could add. The construction is similar to that of Balclutha and other examples, and there's been some extensive archaeological work done on a variety of wrecks of this period and of this type, including some in Hawaii. So there's nothing new to be added. The level of documentation that's been done, particularly with the LIDAR, gives us everything that we would need to preserve that through documentation. And so I don't see an argument for criterion D, and I make that recommendation as the author of the National Register Bulletin for Vessels. Something like this is not what we'd envisioned for criterion D.
Thank you.
You bet.
Jim, this is Katie Stevens from the board. I thought I recalled at the last meeting that you were recommending that some additional documentation occur and that some of it had taken place, but you thought it had not been quite fully completed. Is that correct?
That's right, Katie, but now it has. All of that has been done. HDOT did that. We sent in a team who did everything to the exacting standards of the Historic American Engineering Record. All of that work is now being finalized for review and submittal to the National Park Service and then to the Library of Congress. It's everything that we had asked for when we did the initial work. What I had authorized and had started to work on with the team before I left the National Park Service in 1991 only got us halfway there. What's just been done in the last while gets us to not only where we would have been, but done additional documentation now, because specifically the LIDAR was not a technology we used then, but is now used. And the team that did this, by the way, also just concluded the same level of documentation for the National Historic Landmark Battleship Texas in Galveston. So it's all done and done well. I've seen the preliminary results, and I'm quite pleased, and I think my Park Service colleagues will be too.
Is what was recently completed the LIDAR, or was there other documentation that was also done recently?
The LIDAR was the one component. The other was large format photography to the standards of HABSHARE. That's all been done. Those are now being printed, labeled, and put on the stock for retention at the Library of Congress. That work had started. What you see online right now on the Library of Congress website for Falls of Clyde covers some of it. This takes it beyond that. We've more than doubled the number of images. So Falls of Clyde is now one of the best documented National Historic Landmark vessels once these go into the system.
Thank you.
Question.
Is there a reason why we are delisting prior to these final steps being actually entered into the Library of Congress?
Library listing doesn't really have an effect on what goes into that record at HABSHARE. When we worked on that program and developed the standards for the documentation of the ships back in 1990, the plan was to do this for a number of vessels, not only those that were registered, listed, or NHLs, but others. This process is quite separate from that, and it's not a prerequisite to be put into the record because of that. And we did the same thing with the Evelina Goulart, which is currently in that record, which was in bad shape and was in the process of being dismantled at the time we did the documentation. So it's absolutely fine to pursue the delisting at this stage. It has no effect on both those going in, nor would the documentation have an effect on the question of delisting.
I guess my concern is that at our last meeting, we raised that as a concern for the delisting, but now we're delisting and it still has not been fully implemented at HABSHARE.
Well, it has been done. I mean, to be absolutely clear, the LIDAR has been processed. It is now being put onto a hard drive for submittal to the Library of Congress. The photographs have been taken. They have been initially reviewed. They're being printed, and they will go for one final check and then be submitted. At this stage, having sat through and handled a number of these, this is it's a foregone conclusion. They will be going into that record, and more than adequately meet not only the standards for the records going in there, but significantly add to the documentation of the vessel.
Oh, no, I'm not just disagreeing with that. Only the timing. It seems that, I don't want to say it's rushed because it's a delisting process, but it seems that you would have that in place and then you would have this motion to delist.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, you can't request mitigation this. Then you would have to request it any kind of list. So I think there's separate processes. I think when we do the EA, which is where the state action is, this will be part of the identified documentation required for that process. But I would be a little concerned if the folks are asking for mitigation to be completed prior to the list. That would be an interesting question.
I thought that's what we did last time. I might be.
I think we committed to a program of other research. I don't think we actually specified that it had to exist in the Library of Congress before we considered it complete.
And you're probably right on that.
Yeah, I think actually we had asked that these type of documentation commitments be written and officially stated that they would be completed.
They would be completed.
Right. But instead of that happening, they actually did the documentation rather than making it clear. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, you can still have concerns about you would want to see it accepted and put into the Library of Congress prior. You know, that could be your preference.
No, and I think that's fine for that option, right? To say as part of the action.
Uh-huh. I think so too. I just wanted to comment that it was basically wanted to say that it's a sad day that we have to do this. It really is. And I remember when Bob Krauss was working so hard. And I know that people, many people in the community, tried to keep this going. Alan and I were talking just before about Battle of Vicksburg. They pulled up an old ironclad and have it on display. So that was taking an archaeological site and putting it on land. And we both watched Brit coin or whatever thing, the Brit Bits TV show about great ships. And quite a few of them exist on land, the Cutty Sark and the Victory and all of these. And it's just too bad that somehow we hadn't been able to have enough community interest to propel this in some way.
Yeah, and to be fair, with respect to the Vicksburg submarine, this ship would be in better shape if it had been buried in mud.
Well, I should probably add that the Cairo, when it came up, was broken into three pieces. If we tried to lift Falls of Clyde out of the water, there's no guarantee that it would not break, just given the fragility of the metal and the damage that it has incurred over time and through age and the bacterial. This breaks my heart. I worked specifically on the NHL myself as the director because I believe in historic preservation and in ships. Love Falls of Clyde. This was not an easy task to do, but it was a necessary one. And having been the one that did the NHL, it was a very sad day for me to be on board and to see it. And it's sad to see this. But as a one-time steward of this type of resource, there comes a point where this hard decision has to be made. And I appreciate that you now have to start that process of that hard decision.
We understand. Thank you, Jim. Again, you know, it's so important to the history of Hawaii's development. And I mean, there was a point where one of the cited reasons for the loss of population in Hawaii was the number of young Hawaiians joining ships to go off. And as you look at a picture as late as 1910 of the harbor, just filled with ships like this. And it's just so bad that we will no longer have a memento of that. So sort of our failure, I guess.
Do we need to vote on the first motion if someone was to make a different motion? Not necessarily.
So if somebody is going to make if they want to either amend this motion or make an alternative motion, well, we have one motion before you need to take action. Unless somebody wants to offer an amendment.
What's the amendment?
No, I said unless somebody.
I
heard one. But, you know, you need to act on this first.
Okay, if somebody wanted to amend it to address waiting for documents to be taken into the Library of Congress or something.
No, simply that the documents, that would be a guarantee. Officially accepted, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned with the documents not being in existence.
Would anybody like to amend the nomination? Does the person who made it have to amend it? It could be someone else.
The person who made it has to agree to
the amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Would anybody like to put forth an amendment?
You made the motion.
I made the motion.
No.
Yeah.
I guess the amendment would be that these officially be entered into the
Library of Congress. Prior to delisting.
Can we do that?
I thought we decided not to do that.
So if the moving party and the second agree to it, then you would include that would become part of the motion. If they don't, you would have to get a second for it and vote on the proposed amendment before you take action on the primary motion.
Right.
I think if there's a simple assurance that that is going to be occurring in writing someplace, that's sufficient. I think we can just vote on
it. It's in the meeting minutes now. They've said it.
Okay. All right. It's sufficient.
We can hold until the meeting minutes next month.
I do assure you, as one of the people that got this program going back in the day, it will happen.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay. We like to take a vote on the motion.
Yeah.
I thought you
said no. I didn't second. I'm sorry. I thought that Nick didn't you second it?
No,
I just cut him off.
Oh, okay. So, we need a second.
I'll second it if that's necessary.
Okay. The amended motion.
That's why we're doing discussion.
We're not amending it.
Let's roll this back. What exactly is the motion on the floor right now?
Motion on the floor is the original motion that was put forward.
So you're withdrawing your proposed amendment.
No, there was never an official.
Never an official amendment.
Never officially.
Got it. Who was the second?
Ralph.
No, we shouldn't have had the discussion before the second. I thought it had already been seconded.
Okay.
He said
he
No.
Now he has. Now he has.
Now I have on the first motion. Yeah.
Now he has.
Okay.
All in favor of the motion. Discussion. Oh, yes. Sorry. We can have some more discussion now.
Real discussion.
Yeah. I mean, my only thoughts, and I'm open to what the other board says. I think I appreciate Historic Hawaii Foundation's comments. My thoughts are, though, if it's lost its integrity, if it's not eligible, you know, I don't know procedurally. I would like to see their mitigation commitments, you know, put in somewhere. I just don't know that we have the authority to say they need to do these things to delist it because it doesn't have integrity. It doesn't have integrity. So, you know, I will just say, you know, kind of irrespective of my vote today, you know, just kind of, I would like to see in the EA process or something like that, some of these implemented, you know, as part of the assessment and looking at effect. So that's my discussion. If anyone would like to agree or disagree.
Is your opinion that the mitigation has not been?
My opinion is it's unclear to me if we're assessing mitigation for removing. It's just it either is eligible, you know, it has integrity or doesn't have integrity. If it doesn't have integrity, then I don't know that we have anywhere to stand in terms of requiring mitigation commitments for delisting.
Okay.
Right, because we're not assessing it under D or anything like that. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the process. That's why I kind of wanted to discuss this.
To be clear, the board's authority is to list or delist. The decision before you is whether or not it no longer retains the characteristics that qualified it for listing in the first place. If those are gone, if it's lost integrity, then, you know, that's the decision before.
Yeah.
That other stuff would, you know, there are pending state actions, which may be the, you know, that mitigation would be considered. Yeah. But that's separate from what's the action before the board and the board's authority.
No, if it has integrity under a criteria under which it was not nominated, would it need to be renominated?
I think it is listed for a specific reason, yeah. And that's what matters. Not, right. You know, I don't, if you, I mean, unless you're proposing that the nominating, you know, that somebody go back and nominate it again, because it would require amending the nomination to add a, you know, criteria. Then no, you would not consider it.
I hate to quibble, but since Nick opened this up to a more formal discussion, I'll put the blame on him. But I always teach my students that condition and integrity are not the same thing. You can have something that is paper thin, it has integrity in terms of its appearance and character, and few changes, and it seems that we're just transposing condition for integrity.
If I can address that, please, as, you know, again, the nominator and the National Register Bulletin author, lead author, I looked at both, and I have not conflated, nor have I confused condition over integrity. I think the report speaks for itself in terms of the loss of integrity. And the integrity of the structure itself in regards to what it continues to convey through sense of feeling and all those in construction and the rest, it has lost a significant amount of its actual material. While that could be construed as a question of condition, it is also a substantive loss of the original ironwork itself, which is basically simply disappearing due to the bacterial action. While that will lead to structural failure and is in fact causing structural failure, it is the actual fabric of the vessel itself has significantly disappeared and will continue to. There's no way to stop that bacteriological work. It is consuming the hull. In regards to the main features that we applied our evaluation of the vessel to back with the NHL study, we were specifically looking not only at the hull, because frankly, there were several other hulls in better condition in some ways that were rigged that we had also landmarked, like Elissa, like Balclutha, and others. This specifically was being looked at because it was the sailing tanker, and the condition of the material was not the question. It was what was left and what was represented at the time. Piping was there with a few minor exceptions. At the time, the tanks were water and oil tight. At the time, the pumps were not in working order, but they were there and clearly represented what's happened. What they had done type of work and their manufacture. That's gone now. I mean, most of the piping has disappeared. The pumps have corroded away to nearly nothing. And again, that's not a condition. That's actual integrity of the ability of the vessel through its historic character to reflect that history is gone. I looked at it very, very carefully. I appreciate your point, but, and again, I make this recommendation for delisting with no joy in my heart, but this vessel we would not list it now. We would not list it under Criterion D, even in the National Register. And that argument had been set out in previous years and continues to be the case for the Park Service in listing these, both, you know, in the register or also as NHLs. This vessel is very close to the end, and that is undeniably, you know, one aspect of this, but it has irreparably lost the qualities that I saw and that the board agreed to when we listed it and it was designated.
Thanks, Jim. I think you made it clear. In fact, so much, this is an anonymous suggestion from a Coast Guard friend that you're facing some problem in getting it out to sea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We this may vessel, be you a know, news just, item yet, right?
Well, in the report, I reference a couple of the other NHLs that I did that have been lost. This, what's being done with Falls of Clyde right now is the first time one of these is actually going to be delisted where it's actually been treated in this way. That is, with a process like this, with the delisting before it sinks and falls apart, delisting, which would come as mitigation that was not required, has been done to very thoroughly document and add to it. That didn't happen with USS Cabot. That didn't happen with the Fireboat Deluge. It didn't happen with the Minesweeper. It didn't happen with the submarine. This, I think what has transpired here, while regrettable, has set the bar higher for somebody moving forward with delisting in the future, because these steps have been taken voluntarily because I know people care.
Thank you, Jim. Any other comments or questions? I'd also like to thank the Historic Hawaii Foundation for their comments, and they did suggest several mitigation items that I don't think are being undertaken, but I think, you know, could be considered because of the significance of the ship, and one of them being an inventory and database of features removed from the vessel by typing designation and sort of a record more of what happens with all the pieces. You know, once this ship is taken out of the water, where does that go? I know some elements were previously removed, so something like that, I think, would also be beneficial.
The state doesn't own the property, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're happy, and I want to reiterate what Jim said. Like, this isn't, none of us are enjoying this. We recognize this is important, but it still is privately owned. I think with the EA, you know, if some of the interested parties are able, we would love that, right? I mean, I think we would all. And so I think we're happy to be supportive to the extent that we can, but there are limits because it's private.
Right. And so maybe Friends of Falls of Clyde could help participate in that. Okay. Have a vote, please, on the proposed motion. Resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all in favor of removing Falls of Clyde from the State Historic Register? Did you get that, John? Okay, thank you. All opposed? Thank you. Okay, thank you. Is it appropriate to mention again about the Mackay Golf Course, because there were some people that arrived afterwards? Okay, thank you. Okay, so I just wanted to repeat earlier, we decided at the beginning of the meeting that due to a pending contested case that we're going to need to defer the Mackay Golf Course nomination. So we won't be talking about that later today. Okay, thank you. And also a reminder that the it requires that a written petition be filed within 10 days of today.
The owner's letter is specifically a petition.
Thank you.
Is the
final
vote 21?
Yes.
Is that
yes. Yes.
I'm missing one. We have MDCs on the board.
Yes. Yes, we have two MDCs. Oh. Yeah. We allowed to have seven.
No, we have two MDCs.
Okay. Sandra, are you guys okay?
We're trying to get the presentation out.
Okay.
Just because the first one, he was going to bring his presentation and share it on Zoom, but he ended up not doing so. So we're just
okay. So we'll wait a minute until they can pull the presentation up.
So while we're waiting, we had this last on the agenda. I recused myself because I've worked with Ian next door, so okay. I should probably do it now. Do I need to leave, or do I just hang out and be quiet?
That's up to you, but you cannot participate in the discussion at all.
Yeah, so should I just go ahead and leave? You guys can call me back in.
Or go in the chairs.
Go buy lunch. I hear it's very far away.
You can just sit there.
No, that's impossible. Yeah,
we have a stool. We have a stool in the corner. Hey, we have a stool in the corner for you.
What is the concern?
I've worked with the presenter on properties on the street.
On the street, but yeah, not that particular
not that property. It's probably fine, but I'd rather...
It's a fine line.
I'd rather just step out than have to approve it.
Sure.
Which one is
in front of the ethics board?
The slogan because lunch boy.
They presented last time, too.
Yeah. One in Hanalei with a horrible photo.
Yeah, the original Herbert. What else?
Yeah, by now.
Just go through there. There's a table in there if you want to use it.
Is that detention over there?
It's detention.
Detention?
Yeah.
Detention?
Yeah, I said we should have a stool in the corner and he could face the corner. Why is everybody always picking on me?
Okay.
Thank you.
Never identity back.
No, you did the introductions earlier, Bill.
Let me kiss you.
So, Jess, I still have the question I wrote you about in the email at some point.
Sorry.
Where?
presenters.
About the photo log, thing. Don repeats photo log and then has a picture, and then photo log and then has a picture.
Okay, we'll move on to the next presentation. The slog at Beach House. Okay. He recused himself.
Now, does that change the votes needed to pass?
We still need 4. So no, it doesn't change.
Okay, yeah. So we still
need. It changes the opportunity for votes.
One no vote in the motion.
Right.
So now we have to have all of us vote.
We need to be unanimous for something, right, for a motion to pass. Correct.
We still have quorum.
Yes. Oh, Chandra is the presenter doing this by Zoom?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
No. Thought I set my alarm.
We are all happy.
Is the person here?
Yeah, he's
on Zoom.
Okay.
He's there.
I just messaged him again.
Okay.
To let him know already.
Yeah, so this is good morning, Chair, members of the boards, Ian Jung and Kanoa Chung, here for the applicant, Thornton Smith Partners, LLC. Thank you again for the opportunity to revisit our petition. We duly noted the additions and modifications that were suggested in the last go-around in August. So what we did to update and revise our petition is to note 2 things primarily that were of concern. Is we changed the criteria from criteria B to A at the recommendation of the board. And then we also did a little bit of investigation into the actual SMA history for this particular property, which noted and identified all the additions that were done to the western wing of the existing structure. So what we're looking at here on the screen is the overall compound, both the primary structure, which is the Makai side structure, and the Malka side secondary contributing structure were designed and worked through by our notable architect, Mr. Hart Wood. The details of the new addition that hang a bit lower than the original structure were by Avery Yuen, who's also a local architect here on Kauai, which he actually started this petition a few years ago, and then Kanoa and I picked it up to try and complete the task here. So if we could move on to the next slide. So this is what, in our revised petition, we changed in from criteria B to A. And on the next slide, we centered the focus of criteria A for the particular property, basically on the premise that the Sloggett and Wilcox families, as they were a notable plantation era sugar industry families, as well as missionary families, and how they were influential in working through some of the historic structures that are now known on Kauai. And it's our, I guess, vision to see how some of these discussions and their philanthropic ventures that occurred during their summer retreats may have been those discussions which led to how they gave back to Kauai, as well as worked up plans and thoughts for future structures on Kauai. And some of those important future structures that are now structures we all use, the Wilcox Memorial Hospital, the Kauai Museum, which was the prior library, and now the frequently visited Grove Farm Museum. So these are some of the primary philanthropy that the Wilcox and Sloggett family worked through and did to help what we now use here on Kauai. So our thought is, you know, the Sloggett and Wilcox families helped to fund and design some of these notable structures that are now, and some of them are actually on the register now, through this work and coordination with our architect, Hart Wood. But we went through on our last go around the history of the Sloggett family's visit to the island. So we'll skip that, given I see you have a stacked agenda here. But for criteria C, I think most of you are familiar with the master architect, Mr. Hart Wood. His focus on Kauai He had, from what I understand, two residential structures, including this one, as well as a number of non-residential commercial structures on Kauai. And it kind of went in line with Charles Dickey working on some of the other notable buildings on Oahu, which is the A&B building and I think the Korean consulate now, as well as the Board of Water Supply building. So he's a pretty well-known architect, obviously, in Hawaii, and his style of working through the Hawaii regional style with sort of that Pan-Pacific approach with merging some of the old European styles of architecture worked well for this particular building. So moving on to the next slide, and I put into our slide as well as the petition, the revised petition, all of the amendments that and additions that happened to this. But I think this north view and the next slide, which will be the south view, we could go back to the north view. If you identify the primary changes from the north view is this hallway that connects the original slightly larger gable style roof that connects to the addition second gabled roof. And if you look closely, you can see that the board and batten siding as well as the shingle siding all have retained their original material use by Avery Ewan, who's the architect that did the 2010 renovations. So if we could go to the south view. So this, I think, illustrates the primary change, which is this hallway from this original gable roof. And the hallway connects to the second gable roof. And the intent when they did the addition in 2010, from what I understand, is the family just need a little more space. And so they added a second bedroom on the lower floor and then a third bedroom on the upper floor. And then the hallway that connected the two gable roofs there sort of functioned as that passageway as well as also for some additional closet and interior space. Some of the other changes that occurred, you can see a bit of glazing on the left side of your screen on the windows. The tsunami of 1957 punctured through this particular structure. So it had already lost some of that fenestration and wall detail that was there previously. So when they went back in, they took out some of the French doors and put these sliding doors in based on that covered lanai. And then the area that's under the second addition on the second floor, that was an existing open uncovered lanai, which now becomes covered with that second floor addition. So some of the primary features that remain, obviously, are the first initial gable, as well as the lanai ports that oversees out into Hanalei Bay. So next slide. So a lot of the interior remains the same. There was a wall that connected the kitchen to the living room. That was backed out. This spiraling staircase remains. The big, great open room remains. On the right side of your screen, this was a covered lanai that was open, which was then enclosed with that glassing in 2010. And this wall was opened up. So it's kind of, as you're sitting in the primary living room, you could look out and enjoy the views of Hanalei Bay from that area versus looking through windows from the side. So next slide, please. So this is from Mr. Wood, the book on Mr. Hartwood that Don Hibbert produced. And one of the primary features you can see is this initial gable that connected over this. It was storage, which was converted in a garage, extended slightly. But one of the things that the Avery Ewan, the architect that did the plans in 2010, thought was to merge this by announcing this a little higher frame and then bringing it over to that second floor bedroom addition. The eyebrow / dormer still remains. You can slightly see it, but there's some venting here that shows that it was an actual open lanai, which was covered, but later enclosed with that glass. Next slide, please. Now, one of the cool things that the current owner maintains in the property and on the property is a pretty extensive guest book, which, you know, if we are successful in this petition, one of the thoughts we had was to have it archived with the Kauai Historical Society. It's pretty voluminous, you know, and so one of the hard included in this particular petition. But we could work with Gaylord Wilcox, who's one of the remaining Wilcox family members, to get his consent to get this archived with the Kauai Historical Society, because there's a lot of interesting photos of some of the recreative use they had, where, you know, people out fishing, surfing, and even water skiing in Honolulu Bay. And then some of the old family photos that are included in the book. Next slide, please. We include in the petition the modifications that are made in the addition, just to detail it so we can show what was done. So this is the first floor. If you go to the next slide, this is sort of the elevation angles to show the change from what existed to what was proposed and approved through an SMA process before the Planning Commission. Next slide, please. I kind of walked through this, so we'll skip these. This is what we added into the petition based on the recommendation of the board at our last hearing. So there was some detail, or is now some detail, into what was and what is now. So those reviewing the petition and trying to understand what was Mr. Wood's original design compared to what was exists on the property now. So we can skip down the next few slides to save you guys a bit of time. Next slide. Next slide, please. These are just the interior remodels. And so the question that was raised for historical integrity, we kind of worked through the Secretary of Interior standards and what and how these changes may have affected the historic integrity of the structure. And I think there's two important things that that Kanoa can get into, but just to summarize them, the materials were matched. So we had the board batten on the upper floor matched up with what existed on the structure. And then we also, as well as the lower floors shingling approach, which was one of his Hartwood's signature styles. I actually stayed in Mr. Hartwood's primary home, his home in Manoa, and it had those similar features to it. And then one of the other issues that was prominent, I think, was to use the matching gable, similar to the primary feature of the gable that faces the south view, to match that, but on a slightly smaller scale, so it's a little smaller than the original gable. So if we could go to the next few slides, we pulled the comparison from these interior standards, and I think we meet the criteria with sort of trying to match the materials and then matching the form. During the time of the renovation, the planning department looked at these renovations to ensure that it was compliant and went through the Kauai Historic Preservation Review Commission. So that's sort of the presentation in a nutshell, and I think Kano would like to add a few things, and we'll be open to questions thereafter.
Yeah, aloha, everyone. Thanks, Ian. I think Ian covered it pretty well, but just in terms of the overall architectural form and massing of the building, I think most of that's been preserved, and really the addition tends to be secondary to what originally was there. And I think just another thing, you know, I've grown up in Hanalei my whole life. I'm born and raised on Kauai. And I think one of the things that may not necessarily come through in this is the actual visual impact of the addition. I think as you drive down Beke Road, the original form that Hartwood created is really a prominence there. And what's added to the west tends to be secondary to that. And I think that's just something important to note, just in terms of how this addition relates and impacts what you're seeing in regard to the original home. But aside from that, I think Ian touched, you know, primarily on the finishes and how things have basically tried to maintain and carry through in what was added. And yeah, that's all I really have to add at this point, and open to answering any questions that you all might have.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions?
How much of the interior was original to the 1920s, 30s? Was that big, you know, staircase, things like that? Were those original features, or those features added in 2010?
Yeah, the staircase was an original feature, but in 2010, the primary interior changes where there was that the knockout of the wall that opened up to now an enclosed lanai versus just a open covered lanai. So that was one of the primary ones. And then there was another wall between the kitchen and the living room. If we could go back to the some of the photographs on the upper slides, that would help illustrate it. What's the next few slides up? Yeah, right here. Oh, one more down, please.
Right here.
Okay. So you can see how, you know, with the recessed roof line there, and then there was a wall here that opened up to where this pool table is. This was the original deck, and these walls were taken out to kind of open up this space to have additional usage as well as for that viewplane. One of the difficult things about this particular property is the open district. So they're pretty constrained on land coverage. So they won't be able to do any future additions to this property because they are maxed out on land coverage because it's 10%. So I think they got up with the two primary contributing structure and the smaller residence, they're maxed out at like 5,600 square feet. So there's no intended additions and nothing can be done to this property. And that's why the owners were like, hey, this is our time to recognize the historic value of this and get this lodged in. And then one of the other additions on the left photo, you can see that there was a wall that was separated the living room and the dining room. And the living room and the kitchen. And they opened that up and had this hanging cabinet put in.
So what percent of it is Hartwood's original versus the new addition?
I would say about 2/3 would be my estimation on it, because the addition of the bedroom wing on the west end of the structure, the original structure was, I think, about 3,300 square feet, and then the addition added another 1,200 square feet of coverage with the upstairs and downstairs bedrooms.
I know you don't have the mind of the original architect of the addition, but was there a reason why he decided to mimic the Hartwood design in the addition versus having something that stood as being a new part or a new addition?
Yeah, I think Avery Ewan was, you know, he's been an architect on Kauai for a long time and former planning director. So I think what he represented in his application was that he wanted to match the form and style of the building to preserve its historic integrity. And those were his words in the SMA application. But it seems like the intent was to at least match versus distinguish what's there now and what was there and what is going to be there now.
The flooring that we see in the pictures, is that the original?
You know, I asked the owners of that question. The history of this parcel is when Richard Sloggett passed away, the property transferred hands, and it's been owned by several different folks. And I asked the current owners that very question, and they just did not know. I mean, it looks kind of like an oak floor, but unfortunately with the glaring of the photos, one looks more like a redwood floor. The other one looks more like a stained oak floor. So we don't know what the flooring status was. We know the staircase is original, but not the existing flooring now.
Because it's not showing evidence of the walls that were removed, in which case it's probably more likely that it was replaced so that it could be continuous.
Or they could have matched and put...
That's not easy. Not impossible. But.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things when I like the plantation manager's house in Kilauea, that's on the registry, you could see those old Ohia floors. And when I walked in here, I didn't get that sense that it was the original floors.
Do you have any sense of how many of the original doors and windows exist in the original portion of the house, or were most of these replaced?
I think a lot of the exterior doors were replaced, you know, on the, especially on the Mackay side after the tsunami in 1957, they had to replace that fenestration and doors. But if you look at the front door looks to me that because there's some stained glassing in there as well as, you know, a newer style door. So I think they replaced the front door. The interior doors, it's, you know, I didn't take that close of a look into, as to the interior doors and that those are new or not. But it does note it on the plans for replacing doors. But typically that's what happens due to wear and tear, right? They just replace doors.
And that recessed ceiling, is that a new introduction as well? It looks like it's natural wood with canister light.
Yeah, do you recall, Kanoa?
Yeah, I think that may be new in terms of the finishes.
Yeah, this property, you know, ironically, once it changed hands, it became a church for a while, and then it housed employees of the Hanalei Trader Building Dolphin Restaurant, you know, which is another, it's not on the registry, but it's a well-known historic building on the North Shore as the gateway in Hanalei. So it housed a number of employees that worked at that restaurant. So it went from a church to becoming a party house and then is now just a private residence. So I think it probably went through some tough times as the usage of this building endured that different type of crowd.
Do any of the images that you have in this presentation show what the house looks like sort of when you drive in, sort of you know, the public view or even when you first came in?
Sure, yeah. If you could go up to the third slide. One more. Yeah. Okay, so as you can see that there is a line of, I believe these are Rica palms that do inhibit the view from the general Veke roadway area. But you can pull up to the gate and look in. So it's going to be difficult to see from Veke Road. But most of the vegetation on the Mackay side is low, and it's naupaka, so you can see over it to peer through the great yard into the Mackay view or the south view of the house. One of the things, if this is approved, we petition for a historic a historic dedication. Then, as a part of the historic dedication process with the County Real Property Tax Office, is that they require visual viewing from the roadway or a schedule of when the property would be available for visit. So the owners are well aware that you know, if this is approved, there will be some public viewing postings that open it up, you know, not to go inside per se, but just to walk the premises to view the actual structure on certain days of the year. It's similar to what's done on the Rice project over on the south side of the island.
Does one of the two elevation photos that were a little bit further in the nomination show that view of driving up to the house? Does it show that side of the house?
It does. If you go down a couple.
Not from the road, unfortunately.
But more of just when if somebody was, because I'm just trying to get a sense of when you look at it.
This one.
Yeah. So you can actually, if you look through the gate, which is not a wood gate, it's just kind of a framed gate, you can look through and see this exact view plane if you stand at the driveway.
So I'm wondering, when you look at this, which part of the house is the original versus the addition?
Okay, yeah. So I don't know if you guys can see I don't think you can see my cursor, but starting on the left side of the screen, the taller gable roof on the right side, that is original to this first gable. What is in addition is the hallway connection. You can kind of see the shed roof that was original, but it was extended. And then this hallway was extended and this second gable was added with this dormer on that second gable. We looked through the records and couldn't quite figure out when there was a garage that was added here as a first floor garage, but we didn't have any evidence of when that was built. But but this was added on to this garage. So I guess there's two phases of additions, the garage addition and then this second floor extension.
I think it's this front facing gable and then the right side.
Okay.
The original and then everything. Correct. I think the two Dickey style roofs aren't original and the thing on the left.
Okay.
Not.
Okay.
The ones in front are original.
Is that correct? The front two kind of double pitched gable roofs aren't.
Yeah, original? I think correct. This was just this covered entry was added.
Yeah.
But the second one to its left?
Also added.
Also added?
I think there was a room here, but I don't know if this double pitch roof was added thereafter. We can go to the original photo. We'll go to slide.
I think the first or second slide had the same view.
Is there a historic picture that they have?
Yep.
Can you go back?
There we go.
There.
That's same view.
Unfortunately, this is actually looking from Mackay.
Okay.
So we don't have much evidence of the front view.
Mm-hmm.
So the only one we have is on the slide from what I've seen here.
There is a rendering by Hart Wood that's in my book.
Mm.
Which, yeah, that both the double pitch aren't existing.
All right.
And the entry is much more modest.
Yeah.
You missed the introduction of your book in the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were mentioned not.
Yeah. When was that photo from?
It wasn't a photo, it was a rendering.
Oh, they had a photo.
Huh? No, they had a
drawing. This is their photo. They're both, right?
This is from the Mackay side. Don saying that there's one from the Malka side that was a drawing.
But these photos are from your book too, right?
I don't know.
I think so.
Okay. Somewhere. Okay. You have the book.
Correct. Yeah. So the sketch that they're referring to is it's a sketch, but there's no photos of what was actually constructed.
Do you have the book in front of you?
not I don't have it in front of me, but I have the sketch in my files here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Don didn't bring his copy.
I know. I thought it just slips into your back pocket, right?
Yeah.
Library references.
Right. Okay, further questions from the board? Any questions from the audience? Okay. Anybody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to... Make a motion to recommend the Slogged Beach House. This is for
the state register?
For the state register.
Under criteria A and C.
Under criteria A and C. Thank you. A and C.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, my only concern was...
Wait, we'll get him second first.
We have a new second.
I'll do a second.
Okay.
Otherwise, we don't have a point of discussion.
Okay, yeah, my only concern was that the new section looks so much like the original Hartwood structure. But I think that the Hartwood structure is preserved within the building itself.
Yeah, I think there's a couple schools of thought to additions, and one is to make it look completely different.
So or sufficiently different.
Yeah, or easily identifiable. And others say make it match, but be able to be discernible, especially to somebody who understands architecture and those elements. So standing far away and to the average person, it may look like all one structure, but as you get closer, you can identify, yes, these windows are all slightly different. Mm-hmm. And so, different schools of thought, I think.
So what would this fit under, Katie, you think? Would you be able to?
Second. Yeah.
I remember Ernest Connolly used to be the, what do you call it, the judiciary officer for the Tax Act program, and he said just what you said.
Yeah.
And a discerning viewer should be able to recognize the difference, because he was facing postmodernism at the time.
Yeah. I think one example of that here is the Hawaii State Library, which has an addition on the back, which looks kind of like it was all constructed together. But if you look more closely, there's...
I agree. Postmodernism pushed that in a way, the Willard Hotel and things like that. So it did get hard to see. I guess my concern is the amount of change to the main body as well.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about that.
The staircase was very nice, the preservation of that interior.
It was good that it was preserved, but the wood ceilings look very... Yeah. Like a very modern treatment to my mind. This is nitpicky because I think they covered criterion A okay, but normally you'd see it as a broad pattern, not a collection of families. So you'd talk about maybe representative of an elite class of owners and managers on the island of Kauai, as opposed to having to go into all the detail of the family as part of criterion A. I would think would be a better way to have treated that. I think that's the intention of the criterion A, the history. But that's fine.
I suspect on Kauai, those families are the broad sweep of history. Right.
They are, but they never say that, right? It's always linked just specifically to different families.
I think my concern was more the scale of the addition in relation to the original house. I mean, often an addition is a smaller piece of it, and also a little bit of the new work being kind of on the front.
I guess the question would be, if this were already listed and it went through the review process, would this addition be allowed?
Right.
My inclination is
answer to that.
My inclination is yes.
Well, I mean, the answer is yes. I mean, the property owner gets to do what they want.
I mean, but I mean, and retain their status.
An
NR property, right? If someone adds to it.
So, I mean, I think the question then becomes whether the board would delist it, because we don't have that authority.
No, but you follow the Secretary of the Interior's.
Right. We would apply standards. Secretary standards, and in the review process, we might make recommendations about alternative ways to treat something. We also might, might also recommend mitigation measures depending on the outcome. But ultimately,
ultimately comes back to the board. I understand that. But like I said, you'd be someone would be advising them. Let's pretend it's in another state, right? Oregon, right? Someone would be looking
at it. In every state, ultimately, the property, people have property rights. And particularly in Hawaii, where the counties view building permits essentially as ministerial acts, which is that's where, decisions about design get made, really, is at the county level,
Well, let's take it to the ITC kind of review. Would you have approved this in an ITC review? I guess that would be a better question.
I don't know the answer to that. But I mean, we would have to look and sort of pull it all apart and consider it. But
that's investment tax credit for people who don't know.
I was comforted that it's 2/3 of the original and 1/3 of the new.
There's nothing on the amount of addition and rules for the, there's something on the amount of exterior walls that was left in. 3/4 of the walls have to be original.
Yeah, but I think there is some sort of the feeling of the context of the original structure versus the new. I mean, if you had a little tiny 500 square foot house and you added, 4,000 square foot something to it, that would change. Yes, but it would change a lot about the setting and sort of the context of the original structure. So, right. Something to think about. Okay.
I wonder if this house, as shown in the photograph, was listed, the kind of character defining features of it, the way that it looks, right? Some of the interior features, maybe the stairs, things like that, would all be kind of contributing factors. But after the addition, I wonder if, you know, because we're having difficulty discerning what's new and what's not, what was Heartwood versus kind of what it's more, I don't know, contemporary regional kind of, you know, something that calls back to it. Like, I mean, this house in this photograph and from the other side, you know, didn't have the double pitch sticky roof. Some of these other things that other architects did at that time, but not hardwood. I don't know if we would call it a hardwood house now.
I think hardwood did.
Yeah, he did, but not on this house.
Yeah, that's my not point. On this house.
That's my point, right? Is that, is it this house still? I don't know if it's this house still.
Yeah, but if Hartwood walked into it, would he recognize it?
Right, right. He'd be like, oh, there's a major addition.
And on the inside, too.
Yeah, and yeah. You know.
One thing that got me was the removal of two major walls, so opening up the interior plan.
Yeah.
And that's not uncommon, but
sure.
But these seem really major.
Yeah, right.
I mean, hardly ever do you have a, you know, bathroom or kitchen that's 100 years old that lasts with the house, right? But
rarely would Heartwood have had a kitchen that's in the living room either.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Take a vote on putting the Sloggett Beach House onto the Fire Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C. All in favor?
I'll go with aye. Aye.
You're voting yes.
Yes.
Okay. All opposed? Okay. Thank you. You can let Nick back in. Thank you.
Good to see that we're not a rubber stamp board.
Thank you, guys.
Well, I remember when I was a little while not on the board, and I remember seeing a perfectly nice house, so they had put picture windows in one side, and I said, I won't bother nominating this. They weren't actually picture windows, they were historically appropriate looking windows. So I said,
no more discussion than expected, I guess.
Okay.
Next is Laura for the Helena Point Bamboo Ridge Ochiso Stone Monument. Take it away, Laura.
Yes, I'm Laura Ribby, and in this case, I'm an independent researcher and writer. Independent researcher and writer. Is this on?
I don't think so.
Okay, it says Bush.
We can hear you fine. It's
my teaching voice.
Yeah, we hear you fine. It's a small room.
Benefits, but this is not working outside. Okay, please let me know if you can't hear me.
They may need it for their...
Before...
Okay, well, it doesn't seem to be on.
Actually, we might not be able to hear it because it's going to the recorder rather than to
us. Oh, it's not a speaker.
It's going to the recorder.
Okay, if it's going into the recorder, now can you tell?
No,
I don't want to cut people out, including these people down here. Important.
The rest of the people won't be able to see you.
Yeah, just make sure you're on camera here.
Yeah.
So if you'd step in a little bit.
Just move forward.
Move forward, Laura.
It's okay.
I don't like cutting people.
There you are.
I
mean,
you could stand next to Andrea there.
No, that's okay. I can
still be seen.
I apologize.
No, you're good. You're good.
Nothing you did wrong.
Now it's more
important. Now it's like a real hearing.
Yeah. or more formal. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. And this is the Helena Point, which nobody really refers to because everybody commonly calls it Bamboo Ridge. And if you, I'll show you this. And Ochiso is an honorific term. Ochiso is usually what we use in terms of doing this. And I give the measurements there in case you're unable. How many of you have ever been there?
To the monument?
Yeah, to the monument. Yeah.
Yeah. Many times.
Well, fishermen know it very well. Okay. Okay. This is to give you an idea. Is there a pointer on this?
No.
My other one has a pointer.
Top button.
What was that?
Top button.
Top button's a pointer. Well, that would be good if it worked. I don't see it.
Is
Sorry.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Okay, well, I don't know about the pointer because it looks like it's it's kind of a little jumpy. Okay, you can just see this is if you know from the here to Eternity Beach is right here, and Sandy's is over there too.
Uh-huh.
And this is a Hawaii kite. Wait a second, how do you back up? Okay. And then this is a Google view of it, the very small point and very small parking area also. Forward. I'm sorry. Okay. And I will,
Maybe they could advance it for you, Laura.
No. Okay, I guess you'll have to advance it for me then. I do have my own clicker.
Might have not been you. It's a computer. There you go.
Whoops. Back, please. Yeah. Okay, going back. There we go. I think that's the one. Yep. Okay, going backwards. Okay, now forward. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. Okay, the location, and I'm going to read these out loud because each one of them usually gives you the characterizations for the criteria A or criteria C in some ways. The location was named for the bamboo poles used by the fishermen at this popular ula fishing spot at Halona Point in Cocoa Head area. Halona means lookout. This is the third Ojizo guardian there to protect fishermen at this very dangerous spot. After vandals destroyed the first two freestanding statues — freestanding means it has nothing supporting it — the Honolulu Japanese Casting Club asked Otsubo, that's Sentaro Otsubo, to carve a new bas-relief Ojizo in a large lava rock boulder found out on the Cocoa Head site by members of the Casting Club. In other words, the Casting Club found the boulder. Sentaro Otsubo, who was a very well-regarded stone monument carver, had to work with what he was given, so to speak. And this is way back in the 30s, actually about 1939. When one visits the site with its protective Ojizo, shouts can be heard from the fishermen below as a fish, probably ulua, is caught. And I've heard the fishermen down there, and it's just really quite an amazing thing when you hear them shouting because they've got this big fish that they've just caught. Okay, next. Okay. And this is a photograph. I think it's the Casting Club members. Because of the pitted nature of this massive stone, it's a bluestone basaltic sculpture, stone monument carver, Sentaro Otsubo gessoed or used a durable white paint to fill in and smooth the inset bas relief and the calligraphy. Over the years, the weather has gradually stripped the white covering away. So it was, he would have done this as a way of smoothing the surface, so he had better results with his carving, since the stone was given to him. Next, please. Okay, the stone carving is a sculptural reductive process. That means cutting away at the stone. This means that material is excavated or removed from an existing rock, a block of stone. The process uses appropriate hammer and stone carving tools of point, tooth chisels, regular chisels, gouges, and rasp or files and filter, riffler, I'm sorry, abraders. This process, which I have also done myself as a practicing public sculpture artist, first is to rough out the form, second to refine the form, and third to define and refine details and complete the surface texture. So that's the technical way in which you describe sculpture. The monument engraved carving is a carving method whereby the inscriptions are incised and the material removed, leaving recesses, creating the calligraphy. This is a reductive carving method, meaning that the stone material is removed from the object and further scooped out or carved to remove additional stone fragments. The Ojizo figure itself is a bas-relief carving. That is, image is allowed to protrude from the stone. And if that is, to make it a little more clear to you, if you look at a quarter or a coin, you'll see the surface raised slightly. That's a low bas-relief. and this would be a much higher bas relief. Beaufort shows expertise in both engraving and relief carving. That's what made him such an excellent stone carver, and shows special care in the very depths of the carvings, allowing light and shadows to describe the bas-relief image in calligraphy. And I might add that on all of his gravestone carvings that he did too, light and shadow plays an important part in how you regard the sculpture itself. Okay, next please. And then this is the original light granite stone pedestal from the original time when it was put up by the casting club. But to the right, you can see that is the first and second Ojizo. Those were manufactured in Japan and brought here. But vandals destroyed them very soon on, and it was then decided by the casting club that they would have the large basaltic boulder given to Sentaro Otsubo to actually carve, and it would be so that nobody could break the head off is what basically happened. Okay, next. And then what I'm doing when I'm reading these is I'm going through all the criteria that are necessary for the board to review. And so if you people in the audience, you can bear with me. The Otsubo Ojizo Monument nomination emphasizes the art, that is the object or the artifact, and the site. This narration in section 8 of the nomination, which explains criterion A, history and events, includes a description of the type of site, the lay of the land in conjunction with the artistry of each object or artifact. This nomination also emphasizes social history, the importance of community connections and ethnic heritage, Asian importance to the history of Hawaii immigration and first generation Issei attaining ownership of property, including a respected professional business. The Otsubo Ojizo Monument nomination is significant at the local level under the theme History of Industry and Processing Manufacturing Facility Stone Carving Workshop, associated with the commercial development of Mo'ili'ili Town and his artistry's respected commissions. The nomination also includes criterion C, the artistry of the object, the essential materials and tools and the methods of carving used in the creations of Otsubo's sculptures and stone carving business and how his expertise contributed to the lasting monuments in the community. Next, please. Known to many as Ojizo-sama, in Buddhism, it means a person who seeks enlightenment and trains himself to save all living things. Well, of course, the monument and the prior two monuments were there to warn the fishermen at this very, very dangerous spot for fishing. And the early ones around the islands would have been just 4x4 wood with, prayers, if you could say, for the protection of the people doing the fishing. Next, please. And this is a close-up of the detail of the bas-relief carving itself. And you can see how it was incised into the stone to find a smoother section for him to actually do the bas-relief carving. Next. And these are the different views also. The Otsubo carved the large calligraphy, Umi Mamore Ojizo Son, meaning ocean protector Ojizo, there to protect fishermen from the dangerous pounding waves. And I might say at some time in the past, maybe distant past, somebody has decided to put the red paint on what was previously the white lettering. So you see the different directions. Next, please. And then the seven characteristics of integrity, that's always something that is asked for in our nominations. And so the location of the bas-relief sculpture is site-specific, and in sculpture, we use that term very specifically to mean that it relates to the surrounding area, to whether it's cultural or whether it's environmental, but it relates very specifically. So that's why it's called site-specific. It could not be placed anywhere else to protect the fishermen on the shoreline below. The design, the form, and composition follow the first and second Ojizo freestanding sculpture in that the Otsubo bas-relief is frontal with little asymmetry. That means it's not entirely balanced left and right in the placement of arms. If I do too many terms, you'll pull me back, okay? Setting, physical environment, and the character of the place where the stone monument was placed in intensely reflect the tragic events that occurred at Bamboo Ridge surroundings of one of the founders was swept out to sea and lost his life there. Materials of bas-relief carving and a natural indigenous boulder found at Cocoa Head is very compatible with the rugged lava rock environment. The workmanship, Otsubo carved a delicate Ochizo bas-relief in a boulder that was very porous. Originally, Otsubo's fine bas-relief carving and his gesso surface application created a smooth surface, which contrasted in terms of texture and value contrast. Value is light and darkness. Over the years, the gesso has been worn away by weathering. The original base pedestal is carved by Hatanaka, but with a lesser skill than Otsubo. You can tell when you look very carefully at the carvings that it's a lesser degree of skill that he had with his chisels. That was the previous stone that then Otsubo put the boulder carved sculpture above. The bas-relief stone monument captures the spirit of the times. It commemorates the remembrance of loss of life and the warning of the dangers facing fishermen. And the association, the place where the event or activity occurred, the rough native boulder found on the side of Cocoa Head reflects the rugged coastline and the dangerous rocks near the water's edge. Some people in some past life have called it moss rock, but it's not. Moss rock is a light, relatively light rock, which is riddled with porous holes, and it's easy to cut. You've seen it on building facades and things like that. But this is different. Next, please. Justification, the period of significance. 1935 is the creation of the Ochizo Monument. Maybe a little bit later than that. It's hard to know when he started and when he finished. To the 1973, which is the end of our historic period at this particular meeting time today. In 1935, Sentaro Otsubo was asked by the member of the Honolulu Japanese Casting Club to create a bas-relief monument. The procuring of the large lava rock boulder and Otsubo's carving and the installation at Halona Point took place within 1935. The Otsubo Ochizo Stone Monument is eligible for the Hawaii and National Registers of Historic Places at the local level under Criterion A and Criterion C, due to its continuous significance in Hawaii. The Otsubo Ochizo Stone Monument is significant at the local level under A, history and events serving as a sculptural commemorative work associated with the broad patterns of our history. Criterion A addresses the historical events and locations of the work's importance. Section 8, history and events, that's in the nomination, expands on how it is significant, why, where, and when are explained. The monument is significant at the structure, as a structure typifies hard work of immigrants and kama'aina alike to honor and protect all. Next slide, please. The monument is also significant at the local level under Criteria C as a good example of stone carving created in Hawaii. The monument, sculpture, object, artifact, can be called all those things, retains its massing. Massing means how much volume it takes up, scale, how tall and deep it is, and such character-defining elements relative to the site for each. The physical characteristics, the quality of the stone monument continues as evidence of excellence of Otsubo's professionalism. His works show expertise in both engraving and relief carving and show special care in the varied depths of the carvings, showing light and shadows to describe the characters. Under Criterion C architecture, Ochizo is significant as an excellent example of 20th century stone carving. The monument retains its historical integrity in terms of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. Next, please. And then this is our last slide. And this shows this is the cover photo of John Clark's Guardian of the Sea, shows Reverend from the Shingon Mission in Hawaii on Sheridan Street, who officiated at the Ochizo Monument for a number of years. I saw this for a number of years, and then COVID came along, and I think the sensei changed rotational or something like that, and this individual's no longer there. The book captured the story, the history of Honolulu Japanese Casting Club and its many danger cautionary obelisks erected at various dangerous fishing spots. Obelisk just means a pointed top, like you think the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. Okay. Are there any questions?
I was a little confused on the other statue, the full three dimensional statue. That when was that one?
This is it. This is the only one I'm presenting.
No, but the one you showed.
That was prior. That's prior. It has an interesting story. When the vandal knocked off its head, for years and years, and I mean many years, because Harriet Natsuyama, my friend and granddaughter of Sentaro Otsubo, she and her brothers played around the headless sculpture in the stone workshop. Until finally, Sentaro Otsubo found the size of the boulder was appropriate to carve and put the head back on. Now, it is currently at the Palolo Kanon temple with an appropriate scarf around it and a bib, because the hands were knocked off and the head was knocked off. Okay. So it has a home, but it's not at a point in a prior time they did not want it listed. That's basically it.
At the base that he used was the same for the other.
The base remained. The vandals didn't wreck the base. Mm-hmm.
Nomination includes both the sculpture and the base.
I'm including the sculpture, but because it was set on there, we could do whichever we wanted, but I was taking the sculpture as being the specific carved by Sentaro Otsubo. But it could be the base too, because in the nomination I have the translations of what was written there. So it's an important aspect of it also.
The period of significance, though, is the significance of the base.
The base was somewhere in the 1920s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So 35 is the time that the sculpture was put into place on the base.
Yes. Yeah.
But I guess you could argue that the base is then incorporated in 1935 into the sculpture.
Yeah, I think that's
just
that's
like the. Like Constantine incorporating bits of other art into the Arch of Constantine, right?
That's good point. Thank you. And because the record keeping in the 20s and 30s, obviously we're not very good, documentation is not available to find out the exact.
I move that the...
Wait, is there any other questions?
Oh, sorry.
We should have a motion first before discussion.
Well, I was wondering if the same were a question. Okay.
I'll make a motion that the property be listed under criteria A and C as an object and be listed on the state register. You want to have it on the national register? And recommend that it be forwarded to the national register.
I'll second.
Okay.
That said, I would say the period of significance is 1935.
That's a
question.
35 to present day.
No.
73
present day.
No.
Or just 35.
Just 35. Okay.
Yeah. Put the date on there.
Okay.
Nothing changed after that.
No.
So.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor of placing this onto the state register as amended? Changing the date to just 1935. Okay. All in favor?
That's going like Bill did, do it after.
Yes.
Thank you for the congratulations.
Yes. Okay. And I might say too that for people in the audience, the St. Andrews people, if you look at the nomination, you'll see just briefly, I just attribute some of the other public sculptures to Sentaro Otsubo.
Okay, next is the John Andrade property. Is that also you?
Yes. Chandra has been warning Scientologism. She's wanting to be on my.
But there are some people with no, just a phone number on here. But she can hear you.
Okay. Marlene, if you can hear me, you're welcome after I finish my presentation to add anything at any point. Thank you very much. Okay. This is the John J. Sr. and Rose Andrade property. Now, we did the supplemental because Marlene Hapai, who is the granddaughter of John Jay and Rose, wanted to include Rose. And I think that's quite right, because John Jay passed away very soon in 1933, and Rose, all the way up into the 70s, was very instrumental in the property and the family activities too. So this is a front facade on Mamani Street, and you can see the double hung windows on the top. The division, as I go through, I think you may or may not see, the two double hung sets of double hung windows on the right are what is a larger apartment complex. The ones on the left, the three on the left, actually are broken right at the middle set of windows into two apartments that way, and there's two other apartments behind. I'll show the floor plans, and you can see further. And over the years, the retail spaces have changed slightly. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, next, please. Okay, the location is Haina Ahupua'am, the important intersection of the Government Road, as it was called then, now it's called Mamani Street, and roads Makai to the Haina Mill, Mauka to Waimea, and Waipio direction, which is to Waipio. And all of these were very easily, in the very early days, people were walking back and forth or taking mules, whatever, to from the poi factory and Waipio, or the poi and Waipio, all the way up to Waimea and back again, and within a day. So we don't realize that because we drive things all the time, but they were very capable people moving things around. The history of the peoples, the initial sparse settlement by Native Hawaiians on the Waena, the middle section lands of the Hamakua district. Early European and Americans began commercial agriculture in the mid-19th century. Chinese immigrants came to work on the plantations later and became entrepreneurs. Portuguese immigrants also came to work on the plantations and soon became homesteaders in farming and ranching. Japanese immigrants, making up the largest ethnic group, came to work on the plantations and soon became entrepreneurs. Korean and Filipino immigrants followed also to work on the plantations. I might add that this that I'm talking about and the buildings on Mamani Street, of which we've done, I guess, almost 20 nominations now, successful nomination, all were adjacent to the plantation and the mill, but they were not owned by the plantation. And I think that's the distinction. These are all entrepreneurs in the early days that had their families at heart. Okay, next, please. Okay, this is, I don't know if it's big enough for you, but that just locates it on the Big Island. And then the middle section is the Haina Ahupua'a. And then the middle is just a little, the one on the right is just a little bit bigger. You can see the red, which designates the Andrade property, and then going more towards the top of the screen is the Haina Mill and all of the associated buildings with that. But we're not talking about that one. Okay, next, please. And then here's another close-up. This is just shows you where the Andrade property is at the intersection of the main roads. And they would have been probably trails, because in the early days, I'm imagining that the early Hawaiians wanted to walk in the Waena area, because if you walk towards the cliff, the Pali, you would have huge gulches to go around to get traveling. So I'm assuming that it's an okay assumption to make. Okay, next. And this is our brochure that we use in the town and online, obviously in the nomination, which just designates all of the properties that are historical in nature. Next. And then this is the TMK of the property. It was originally part of the Royal Patent Award grant, 3156, from Kalakaua to William Richard. Now listed in the state and county records and the tax map key. You can have all of Big Island start with three. Okay, next. And this is a Google Earth rendering of it. It's hard to see, but it's T-shaped, because what is the addition is the upper part of the cross piece of the T was added in to give some entrance to the Andrade property for the garage, which is in the upper right area, and they needed access to the street. And so Ikeuchi's next door, and the plantation also gave up some land to make that easement happen. Next, please. This is the plot plan. And this, for a great deal of research, were very valuable. Of course, obviously, the field books in the county offices, and also their history papers too. Excuse me. So, what you can see, I think you can see the plot plan basically there, and then the commercial plan. It may be a lot to see everything. This is the second floor, I think. You can just see that the entrance is in the front. I'll go back to the front entrance so you can see where it actually is. And the upper right is where the original hotel was, but it had a fire early back in the 70s. It was never refurbished to be continued as a hotel. Next, please. Okay. And, oh, gee, you know what? I left off the first floor. I hope it's coming up. Okay. And just on the right side is the residence. You can see the plan view and the garage. Next, please. And these are two early maps. The left is the 1914 Sanborn fire insurance maps. These are incredibly important. It shows the old angled front facade, Kapukahi front. That was true before the old government road probably would come in and graded, I think would be the best word to say to that. And then on the right is the Japanese individual who mapped the town. And in the rectangle is where the Andrade property is today. Next. The commercial building rests on a concrete foundation where our walls are of tongue and groove. Single board construction. The roof is Totan, corrugated iron. The second floor front facade has five sets of double hung windows. The Ohia Lanai, that's his Makai, rests on a concrete foundation with post and pier extension. Walls are tongue and groove, single board construction. The roof is Totan. The former Andrade Hotel rests on posts and piers. Walls are tongue and groove, single board construction. The roof is Totan, corrugated iron. The residential structure, also Makai, of the commercial building is two stories, reflecting the slope of the parcel. I'm going to say the slope is extreme all throughout the whole town, but you don't notice that when you're driving along or walking along Mamani Street, but the both sides are very slanted. The residential structure has a wood floor supported by posts on a concrete and stone curbing. Walls are tongue and groove, single board construction. The roof is Totan. The garage rests on a concrete foundation. Walls are of CMU and metal with wood posts and supports. The roof is Totan. Next, please. Okay. The commercial building, that's the one fronting on Mamani Street, remains in good condition and retains its massing, scale, and such character, defining elements as the structure's front elevations, windows, doors, shed roofed awning, and false front with its bracketed cornice. The Ohia Lanai and the Andrade residence also remain in good condition. And the former Andrade Hotel, after the 1977 fire, has not been renovated. Rather, it serves as storage. The walls are single wall construction with double hung windows. Next. John J. Sr., this is a big mouthful that you say every time. John J. Sr. and Rose Andrade property is eligible for the Hawaii and National Registers of Historic Places at the local level under Criterion A and Criterion C due to its continuous significance in small town commerce and its period architecture. Under Criterion A, the property is significant at local level under as a structure typifies the hard work of second generation Portuguese Americans to improve their economic status. It is also coming together of Hawaiian Chinese, and Japanese ethnic backgrounds. And then under Criterion C, which is architecture, it is significant at the local level as a good example of plantation era architecture, wood commercial building, Ohialanai residence, hotel, and garage constructed in Hawaii during the early decades of the 20th century. The Andrade property retains its integrity and so is an excellent example of structures purely for business purposes with adjacent rear residence and garage. The John Jay Sr. and Rose Andrade property retains its historical integrity in terms of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. Next, please. And here, this is here, a few early photos. The upper one, upper left one, is an interesting one because it shows the earliest form of what was then to become the Andrade building. It's a really a two-story one with a very high, I guess you could call it an attic, that goes above the up to the top of the parapet. And then the lower one is the looks like a single story, which was then what they did is in the early days added on and brought it up to the level that we see it at today in the lower right. And then on the upper right is the this is after one of the big floods, which caused these bulldozers to come in and move everything back to where it came from on the fields. You can see the Andrade building on the far right, and you can see just a little bit. I have in the nomination the gas pumps and oil pumps that are right there also. And I might add that along the street, there were many, you might call them gas stations, service stations, because that was a long way to go from wherever you came from, Hilo, to go over to Kona or something like that. On the lower left is the neon sign, which was up for many, many years. And I'm assuming or guessing that because of the supports through the wooden structure, that it probably just was too heavy to be continued up there for a longer time. Okay, next, please. And then the Andrade's very enterprising individual, but he was killed way too soon in 1933. But he had a bus service, and this was very important. There was other cars that had bus services also that went between Hilo and Honoka'a, and they carried things such as the films that were going to be shown in the theaters, or that people could just stop them on the way, and they could go in and out of the, all of the many towns that were along the way between Hilo and Honoka'a. And that's an example of the rolled up shades in case you're getting a heavy shower. Next. And this is showing the commercial building, and I'm walking you around in a counterclockwise way. So the middle section is an access, but it really belongs to the Kotake building on the Hilo side. But they've put in a small stair access, which is seen in the third one on the right, just to get into the back area of the Andrade building. And then the lower left is the closed former hotel. And the middle is closed up former hotel, except for one set of windows. And then the right is the very, very edge on the right of the commercial building, and then the residence. Okay, next. This is Rose Andrade on the right with, I believe it's her niece. Maybe it's her daughter. I'm not sure. I can't remember. It's in the nomination. And the story is, of course, is when the the soldiers came in from Waimea during the war, especially, and they came in hundreds of thousands of them, that they would line up the shot glasses or the or glasses of beer or whatever it was down the row. And by the time the soldiers came in, they had everything all drunk. They put another set of glasses up and poured the next round for everybody. So it was a regular watering hole. You know, Waimea had no liquor establishments. And that's why the soldiers all came down to Honoka'a. And then that's early, we believe, 1940s picture of the women who worked in the both the bar and the restaurant. And I asked Marlene Hapai, who is the granddaughter of the Andrades, to draw a picture of the, I usually ask people to draw pictures of the floor locations inside or other kinds of things that they might be able to provide to give further historical dimension to it. So this one just shows the bar on one side and the probably more family, if you can say, dining area on the right side. Next. An example of an advertisement. There's several advertisements, and then they have an abundance of signs that were out there in the probably the 60s. Okay, next. And this is the new Honoka Cafe, and it has the cash register, which is original, but the rest is brought up to code for having a certified kitchen and all. Next. And then this is the Ohia Lanai. It's for large parties, and if you can see the middle section is best, I think you can see, is there's some ohia logs that are up one, I can't tell how many are there with the three louvered windows. That's where the musicians played. It was originally on the left, but you can probably see it better in the nomination, was open, and the stage was open also, but that was probably closed off because of the trade winds coming in, something. So as you see the detailing here, you see a lot of the ohia wood that's been used also in there, thereby calling it the Ohia Lanai. Next, detailing. And I found one match cover, and that's the main entrance really to the Ohia Lanai is the sign there. Next. And then coming at the same time, that was 52, 53, when the Ohia Lanai was built, was the idea that the Hawaii Saddle Club really needed a home. And so it was the home, and it probably still is the home to this day, of the Hawaii Saddle Club. And Rose Andrade Correa, she remarried after the death of her husband by being injured by a wild horse and then died. Anyway, she gave the land, her family property, she gave the land for this stadium for the corrals and the parade area and the grandstands. Next, please. And then in conjunction with it, because I should go back and just say that not only was Andrade very enterprising, the senior, because he early on, when homestead land was offered, he was able to get homestead land, he was also to get further ranch or pasture land. And so he became a slaughterhouse and also became a meat purveyor until he had his meat shop. And so in conjunction with that, knowing that all of those people up in the Ahuloa, which is just Ismauka of Honoka, were all Kaneolo, basically, of some sort, they had Western Week, which still exists today, and people still go in, get put in the jail if they don't have their little button supporting the efforts. On the upper left, on the far, far right, is Rose Andrade Correa. She's the grand marshal of the parade there. So it just shows different activities that go on right in front of the Andrade building. Next. This is the residence, and I'm just walking you around the home so you can see it's basically just plantation style of vernacular. Next. And this is the interior, which is kept very nicely. Lounge, the dining areas, and the behind it, the living room area and the kitchen area. And the center part I put in because it's pretty important. Those handles were put on new because of the big earthquake that happened. And they didn't want all their dishes falling out onto the floor, which apparently had happened before. Okay, next. And these are just some photos. The left side is the interior of the hotel, which is not in use, but it just shows you what it would have been for hotels. And you know, when the Aniolo came to town for various horse racing events or other kinds of things, they were just stacked up in these rooms to accommodate them for the time they were in town. And then on the right is the oldest photo that we have of what was the hotel. And below it at that time was the garage. And to the far right is the commercial building, which probably also was the house. And then the garage is the lower second, lower one. Okay, next. And this is census. This is just shows that John Sr. and Rose there, and then Marlene and her family had the contribution to the Honakata Library of this fireproof file cabinet to keep all of the very important records. Next. And just to go through the registration requirements, it's as set forth in the multiple property submission, historical and architectural resources of Haina, Ahopua'a, Hamakua District, Honakata Town, Hawaii Island, Hawaii type plantation vernacular. The justification of the period of significance. The period of significance been with the John Jay Sr. purchasing the Andrade property in 1926. From that time, following the death of the senior up to 1973, the end of the historical period, the commercial building has served commercial purposes with multiple retail establishments. Its plantation style today retains all the major characteristics of the original building's architecture. Likewise, the residence building also retains all of the major characteristics of the original building's structure. And then it's significant under love criteria criterion A, serving as an incubator for the entrepreneurial dreams of second generation Portuguese Americans to establish their own enterprises. The period of significance ranges from 1926 to 1973. And I might add that as you read in the nomination, that the family oral history has it at 1924. And this makes for an interesting discussion because, of course, there's no records, but that is their oral history. What is my conjecture is that the Kapakahi building I showed you in the plan view of the Sanborn map was either lifted up and moved to conform to the front of Amani Street, or it was the building was dismantled. The pieces of the building were sort of dismantled and put back together to face the front of the street. But during that time, which we know goes back to 1914, and it's located on the property, it probably had different retail people there. We do know that the Ikiuchis, before they bought their building adjacent, had the tinsmith shop was there temporarily. But it's very, you can read things on the Sanborn map, but you can't read everything that you want to know. So that's basically it. And then it's significant at the local level under Criterion C as a good example of wood commercial and residential buildings constructed in Hawaii. These buildings reflect a good example of 1920s era construction under C, and the 1926 begins the period of significance. That's the Bureau of Conveyances deed. That's why we set it at that date. So that is definite. It retains its integrity and so is an excellent example of structures erected purely for business purposes with a rear residence and garage. Okay, next. Okay, and this is the last slide, just showing you again the white door in the very center that was originally open, but probably vagrancy and things like that caused it to be closed off for the five apartments that are above. So, in the nomination, bay that's to the right, the second bay to the right, from the right, is probably the original door and windows. In other words, what you'll see throughout the town is the wavy glass, the lesser expensive wavy glass windows. Okay, any questions? Thank you.
Quick question on the cutoff date for significance. When was the last major, like, historic change done to the property? Within that period of significance.
In the period of significance?
I mean, I'm suggesting that you might want to bracket it from 1926 to the last major change to the property, not just bring it up to 50 years ago.
When the last building was constructed.
We do have the records from the 1932 residence and garage, but the
few books, if they don't record things, it means that they had a friend that was a contractor or did something. You know, that was that's kind of the usual way that things happened around there. And if you go into all those buildings, you'll notice the add-ons are incredible. And to try to do floor plans of the
I'm just trying to think. When did it, I mean, was there a significant change after the war, for instance? Was there anything major after the war?
Only in the retail stores, I would guess. And some, you know, the Honoka Cafe was really a double bay, you know, set. And then it moved in. Today, it's a single bay, just for economic reasons, I'm sure.
I guess, like, what I'm driving at is if the buildings weren't changed significantly after 1940, your date would be 26 to 40, for instance. Yeah.
Well, okay. I had always listed all the properties, the nominations, is to the latest historic period, just to include it.
Oh, I think we've always said that's not the best time, way to do
okay.
it.
Okay, then.
Registers that, always said
well,
that,
then, you would recommend going back to 1932, which is established date of the residence and the garage?
That would make sense.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 1926 to 1932.
But it, you know, it has so much life in it still.
Social
history, you might even bring it up to the wartime because there was a lot about the wartime.
Definitely. The wartime was incredibly important. Yeah. All of the Paniolo was incredibly important throughout the whole period of time. You know, today the apartments are such rental apartments, but. Mm-hmm. You know, they were hotels. You know, the front was a dance hall. Upstairs was a dance hall. And even one of the Andrade relatives was married in the dance hall or had reception in the dance hall because they went to the Catholic church first and then came to the dance hall. And then later they were cut up into smaller hotels and then now reconfigured as they are now for apartments.
It'd be hard to pin it down.
It is hard to pin down.
I know, that's...
You don't want to lose the social history either, the wartime particularly.
Leave it as 73.
It doesn't hurt to be 73.
Well, the register doesn't like that.
Absolutely. They didn't tell me that before.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's like...
They said they don't.
Like, if we waited four more years, what's this year? You know, would you include it all the way up to 1977 when the fire was, you know, as the last
thing? If it was coming into your review board at that time, I would put in 1977.
Right. Yeah, but, so I guess that's why we're saying that 73 is a little bit arbitrary, because it's just 50 years prior to today.
That's right. When I did the Hongwanji, we were having to wait for the social hall in 71 to get the 50 years. Yeah. And I said to the review board at that time, by the time this nomination gets through, it will be 50 years.
Right, right.
In other words, that's why I put it up.
No, they're not consistent at the register. I had someone recently tell me it should go right up to the point, the historic
the latest point.
Yeah, it's really inconsistent.
Just a point on direction. You know, being from this island, I don't usually use Waipio and Hilo. It might be useful for the readers of this who are not familiar with the island to have the north, south, east, west.
What are those?
Exactly. But attached to those directions.
Yeah, at the beginning, you notice that I do put Mauka in definition, Makai definition. Mm-hmm. Hilo side and Waipio side, you know, way I can figure out the northwest, east, and south. I do it on the photos because I use my compass and figure it out, you know, that way. But if you'd like, I can add that in and put in, but that loses a whole lot of the character.
Well, I thought you had
not replacing it.
I have the definitions.
Yeah, right in the beginning, kind of said where the Waipio side is. Towards YPO.
Yeah.
Because this is going to the National Register too, right?
Yeah. I can just put a parenthesis in those. And
yeah. No, I understand that it's in the direction of YPO, but. Yeah.
I know. Okay. Yeah. I follow you.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to do sort of.
I'm backing you up on that.
Well, just in the first reference is sufficient.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say, westward? I mean, it's kind of. You know,
I would put a specific
southwest
direction.
Or whatever, southwest or whatever it actually is.
You know, if it's northeast or southwest.
You do it for the whole property, then it would be whatever the orientation is of the property plot plan, you want to do it that way, where I have the orienting north arrow. Yeah. On all of my maps are orienting north arrows.
It's simply in the reference to the YPO. When you define YPO direction, the YPO is to
the first time
to the north.
It's a set in. It's a set in where I define the terms at the very beginning. Perfect. So I can just put it in there.
Yeah. Perfect.
I think YPO is on the larboard side.
Yeah. No.
The Mariner it is.
I know. The maritime definitions also.
So just so I'm clear, the stadium is not being nominated.
No, it's too... I'm not sure, but it's because it's so important a part of the Andrade family, that it is there to show the Ohilani to the Saddle Club to the finding of a place for the real rodeos to take place. And they are great big deals. The Western Week and then the rodeo and everything. And it's all taking place through, you know, the generosity of the Andrades to give that a land. But It was not, but just the same as they have property, lots of properties, if you notice in the nomination, in Hololua, where the slaughterhouse was originally. I put the existing old photo that was there. And I think there's an existing, maybe it still is. I have not seen that property, a residence. And then at that point, at the residence was built in 32, then they for sure were living in the residence behind the commercial building. But they have ownership. That was one of the important things. Because the Portuguese came in with families, unlike the Chinese or the Japanese by and large, and whatever, is they came with families that meant they were going to stay. And that meant acquisition of the homesteads and the other lands they could purchase was extremely important. And then you can see how enterprising Andrade Sr. was with the bus company, with the slaughterhouse. He brought meat around to the plantations for people to buy at a very low price from the slaughterhouse. So then he had his own meat market. And then his son, Junior, took on the meat market responsibilities.
It sounds like we bring the significance up to 73.
Yeah, great. So. Easier.
Madam Chair, I'd like to, I don't want to rush this.
Yes.
But we have 6 more nominations before Mauna Kea.
Yeah.
And Mauna Kea, because of the way this agenda is written, must be heard at 2.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura. Very, very interesting as always.
Okay.
Where are we now?
I'd like to make a motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we add the John J. Andrade Senior property to the historic place list of Hawaii historic places.
Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
And
recommend it for the national.
Thank you.
Register of Historic Places.
I'm going to write this down. Second. Yeah.
Second.
Okay. Thank you.
And recommended for the national?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor of placing this onto the Hawaii Register?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. I just like to say that this is part of the historic Monica Town project, ongoing. Thank you very much. I guess I'll leave this here for other people.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you for all your efforts. Oh, thank you.
So I thought maybe we could do the next two, which are La Pietra, and then take a break, unless somebody would like one before that.
I know they recommended
the last one was a violation of the people. Yeah, right?
It
takes 100, is it 100 still or is it 200?
Did you get the name of Mrs. Korea?
Doing research on that.
The second, first, middle name?
I was not.
I didn't catch that either.
Wait, what?
And what about his cousin's vaccination record?
I didn't catch that. I think it was in the nomination.
No, not some more lofty.
Good morning.
John, do you have a book on La Pietra? Okay.
Don, that mic is connected to the recording.
That's
it's not a,
yeah,
there's not a speaker.
Yeah.
We can hear you anyway.
Okay. This nomination is for the Wayne and Harriet Wiedemann residents at La Pietra. Three of you saw it yesterday. The other two hopefully saw the nomination. I'm going to go through this rather quickly. The year the house was built was 1971. The architect was Louis Purcell, who did all the buildings there. We're nominating the house at the local level under criterion C as a good example of a luxury townhouse built in Honolulu during the late 60s, early 70s in a modern Hawaiian style. Criteria A for its associations with the development of townhouse complexes in Hawaii and its associations with the historic preservation movement. These significances are all discussed in the OAP umbrella multiple property form. Just so you know, this is what we've got to date. The two blue ones are what we're... Oh, wow. How does that work? Okay. Okay, but anyway, the two blue are what we're doing today. The Wiedemann house is on the left, and the second house we'll be doing the Ariyoshi Hampton house is over on the right. Everything else is on the register except for the one in orange on the right, which we didn't list last time.
So we can pick that in the future?
I hope so. This is the house from the exterior. You can see Diamond Head behind. It's the left-hand side of a duplex. And like all the others, it has the tip gablet roof, which I forget we called it something else now.
I think we call it a
hip on gable.
Gable on hip.
Okay. And anyway, downstairs is lava rock. The second floor is wood. Have balconies on both the front and the rear elevations. Here you can see the balcony. Inside the house is probably one of the most intact in the whole La Pietra area. Mrs. Wiedemann moved in 1972 and was the original occupant of the house, and they've done very minimal changes. You can see the teak veneer is still on the walls. The ceiling is open all the way. Have doorways front and rear. Still has its wet bar, has the original handles for the doors, most all of them. The stair is all original. She told me she put this rug on the stair because in case she falls sometime, she won't hurt herself as bad. She's 92 now.
Is that the original tile too,
then? No, she changed the tile. But you can still see the divider between the kitchen and the dining room is still in place with its mirror wall. The kitchen has been updated, all new COA doors put on the cabinets. That's it. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. But the house is very much intact. Don't expect it in all of them at all. I think this house, Mrs. Fung's house, and the Lau residents, all who were original owners, are probably three of the most intact in this whole complex.
Yeah. Okay. I move that the 3022 La Pietra Circle be listed on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places, and
that's enough.
And that's enough.
I second it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, vote to place this on the Hawaii Register. Okay, thank you.
Vote was unanimous?
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
So the next residence is also at La Pietra, the other one closer to the entry. And this is the James Ariyoshi and Robert Hampton apartment. Both Mr. Ariyoshi and Mr. Hampton were vice presidents in Head Rock, who was the general contractor that built La Pietra. Ariyoshi is the brother of at the time, Lieutenant Governor, soon to be Governor Ariyoshi. And he was a banker. And so after he left Head Rock, he became a mortgage banker. And Hampton was a real estate consultant with Head Rock and then became vice president and then went on his own to do real estate work as well. They never lived in the apartment. That's why I call it an apartment. They owned it from 72 to 77. And then they sold it to the Senefs. The Senefs also, they had a house on Diamond Head Terrace, and so they also used it as a rental. And so for many years, it was a rental house. Oops. Again, year built, architect is the same. Criteria is also the same. Again, looks very similar. Same roof, same walls, same balcony, same large stairs.
Come on. You better advance it, man. Oops.
You go one too many here. And again, this one, the finishes inside have been changed quite tremendously, but the spatial configuration remains intact. You can still get the very much the sense of indoor outdoors, with big sliding doors going out from the back and the front. The living room has full height. Hit it again. Okay. The stairway has changed, but it's still in its original location. Next. Okay. This one, again, the kitchen has been remodeled and changed, which is typical of most all the units. You still have, again, this very spaciousness of more sliding doors going in and out. The lava rock walls are still in place. Next. And upstairs in the bedrooms also, you still have the sliding doors going out to the lanai, so you have easy indoor-outdoor access throughout the house. Again, the rear yard is fairly large, which is typical of all the houses here in the development. So that's it.
You said the original owners were part of the construction company of La Pietra. Did you mean La Pietra School or what's now school or of
no,
this?
No, the company that did the townhouse development. The Headrock was the general contractor. Right.
Was this the only unit that people in Head Rock bought?
No, there's three or four, several of which we've registered. Matter of fact, both the Head Rocks are two brothers. Each of them had units also. And I think the comptroller had a unit with someone else.
Any other questions? Okay, I can make a motion.
I'll make the same motion, okay. I guess. I move that the what's the address of this property? Unit 6?
Yes.
From the La Pietra townhouses be listed on the State Register, the Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
I'll second it.
Under criteria A and C.
Thanks. Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, take a vote to with us on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places. Okay. Thank you, Don. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was there.
Yeah.
It was there.
It was there.
It was hesitantly there.
Yeah.
So, break, or would you guys like to do one more?
I took Paul more.
I can do one more.
Yeah. Would you like a break, or would you like to do one more?
Break sounds good.
Okay, we'll do that.
5 minutes.
Is someone waiting? Time. Are you waiting for the next one?
Eat your lunch real quick.
The lady's waiting, lunch break? I think.
Well, it's noon, so.
I know, but we have someone waiting.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay. Go ahead, then.
The next one, none of you have seen. This is on the island of Kauai. The Sakuichi and Chiko Matsumoto residence. It's down in Poipu. It's built in 1949. We don't know who the designer was, although Wendy, who's here, will be talking, says her grandmother was influential in the design.
Huh?
We're nominated under Criterion C at the local level as a good example of a house built on Kauai during the late 1940s in a late bungalow style, using single wall plantation style materials and methods of construction.
The house, you can see it outlined in blue, is at the end of the street, down below the, you can see the ocean line where the shoreline is. All the other houses on the street except one were destroyed in Hurricane Iniki.
Wow.
This is the other house that remains on the street that's original. Everything else is gone.
Wow.
They've got been rebuilt with new houses, but it's all new.
Uh-huh.
Here's a aerial view of the house. You can see the house. The roof during the hurricane was blown off, and but replaced in kind. The property line essentially goes, there's a rock wall here, there's a rock boundary wall in the back, and then another stone wall on the side. So that defines the property. Here you can see the house. It's single wall. You can see the girt, the windows projecting out. You can see bungalow elements, the Well, here is more of that. You can see the lattice work, which is typical of plantation, post and pier, typical of plantation. Double hung windows, also typical of plantation period. The rear, we have sliding windows. There's also a potting shed on the left. Here you can see the bungalow influence, where you have the lava rock, front porch, battered columns, a segmental arch entryway. So it elevates it a little bit above a typical plantation residence. And it's a very late use of bungalow elements, actually. The house is incredibly intact, considering the fact it lost its roof in Iniki. You can see we still have the original screen doors. When you go inside the house, you have the original floors, the original windows, original walls. The ceiling is new because of the hurricane. Original front door that has the original hardware. Latches at the bottom for the screen. Here's another view looking back from the living room towards the front door. You're looking from the kitchen in this photograph. The kitchen is very much intact. Also, it has a new countertop, but the cabinetry is all original. The island was rather interesting. Something the mother did. It's movable. And originally, it sat in that nook with the smaller stove. And the back screen door is still original, very typical of the 40s, 50s period, where you have the wooden panel that slides up to cover the screen door and secure it. There's also above the stove, you can see a screen ventilator that goes out into the laundry room area. Again, even the back door has its original hardware. One of the cabinets has a circular lazy suit and goes around, goes all the way up. That's all still there. Even has a dial phone. That works, yes.
Wow.
Yes, still works. And then you can see here the dial phone, the kitchen, and going into this room is a sewing room. All the closet doors are original, single panel, as are all the interior doors. They all have their original hardware. Again, single wall construction. There's an interior girt on all the interior walls. You can see this room, which was a sewing room originally. The sewing room has a sliding door on the left side, which goes into one of the three bedrooms. And again, you can see the sliding door, closet with storage above, double hung windows here. Some of these double hungs are not original. They were replaced with jalousies. The current owner took it back to wood double hungs.
still see the crown molding and all the rooms. Again, go out into the hallway from this bedroom. Again, original doors, knobs. At the end of the hall, there's a linen closet with shelving. Looking the other way down, this is looking towards the street. You can see the second bedroom, which has a transom in it. The frame is still there. There's no window in the transom, but I'll show you in a minute. The hinges are still there. The door on the right goes into the living room. Come on.
Game at the computer, maybe. Aim at the computer, not at the screen.
Oh, okay. That's my problem. Okay, sorry. New technology. Here's the middle bedroom. Ah, yeah, it works. Here you can see the closet, the door going out to the hall, the former transom. Here you can see the hinges still sitting on the transom. In the hallway also, there's a little shrine, which you can open and close with the doors and has a little drawer underneath. And this is shrine to the grandmother now. Wrong name. Okay. The bathroom has a new floor, but it still has its original sink, original shower. Come on. What am I doing wrong? This cabinet was original. It has a new counter on top now, but it still has the ventilated hamper on the left. Oops. Okay. There it is. The hamper that opens up is still built in. This is the front bedroom. And it had a little built-in space for a vanity at one point. And so, again, original doorknobs throughout. The garage is also very much in original condition. You can see the rolling door. It's still in use. Has the original sliding windows. This large opening in the garage leads into the laundry room area. And the laundry room, this back door from the kitchen leads out onto the stairway. Here you can see the laundry area. Again, another sliding door. The structure to the right is a shower. And come on, go. And on the other side is the toilet. And then there's a back door that goes outside to the backyard.
Why is the ceiling so high?
I don't know. I was trying to figure that out too. And that I can't figure out. Then here you can just see outside that the potting shed to the left is disconnected. It's not part of the house. It's independent standing. And here you can see that one potting shed that still remains. There's remnants that used to have other hothouses on the property. You can still see the foundations that were built for those. There's another one. Oops. And then, Nick, this is just for you. The back wall. The owners were told that it's an ahupua'a wall. And I said reputed. I don't know for sure, but they said on the other side of this wall, there is an archaeological preserve. And the archaeologists that were working on it told the owner it's an ahupua'a wall. It runs here and it runs partway up and partway down, but they're both disconnected after this portion.
It's a big skull.
And that should be it.
So at the end of it.
All right, the house is very much intact. Wendy would like to talk a little bit about the house and her grandparents.
I just want to thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of our position. I wanted to briefly share, is this working?
It just goes to the recorder, so it's not broadcasting.
So I
wanted to briefly share some history of the home and about my grandparents, Chieko. It's Chieko, not Chico, Chieko, and Sakuichi Matsumoto, who built the home. So, interesting fact, my grandmother Chieko was a picture bride. And after marrying my grandfather, Sakuichi Matsumoto, in the early 1900s, they worked at the Makawa Plantation on Kauai. My grandmother, who was fairly ambitious, strong personality, heard about a job opening to work as a house servant in Poipu for the Baldwin family. She applied for the job and gladly accepted the position, as this was literally a promotion for them, you know, working for the plantation. They moved from the plantation. They moved from the plantation to Poipu, where she cooked, cleaned, did laundry, ironed. She took care of the Baldwin children and other needs of, we called her Mother Baldwin. My grandfather worked as a gardener on the property, and he performed other tasks as needed. So while working for the Baldwins, they lived in a tiny dwelling on the Baldwin property for years. And this is just steps away from Brenneke and Poipu Beach, right on the beach. The dwelling barely fit a bed, toilet, and cooking area for my grandparents. Sadly, the Baldwin home and the tiny dwelling that housed my grandparents for years was swept away by hurricane. I believe it was Eva, the first hurricane. So during the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, until they died, my grandparents built a good reputation in Poipu, and they were hired by other well-known missionary families, including the Wilcoxes. She worked for Meepo Wilcox, Judge Rice, the Knudsens, you know, the big landowners in Poipu area. And until this day, we still hear from some of the descendants from the families, these old missionary families that my grandparents worked for. And they often speak fondly of my grandparents and their loyalty to their families. From the time they started working for the Baldwins in the 1920s, they saved and saved their money for years so they could buy land and, you know, build their own home. Once the home was built, this their pride and joy. It was a beautiful home, beautiful. And during our childhood, we spent our entire summer. We're from Honolulu, and we spent our entire summers with our cousins on Kauai with our grandparents. So we have really fond memories of this home and our grandparents. So there's a lot of the history to share, but in summary, with this historic designation, I would like to honor the legacy of my grandparents that they left with us, especially their hard work and the beautiful home they built and proudly shared with the family. And you know, we really love the home. We have fond memories of our grandparents, and we want to preserve, you know, this legacy for future generations of our family. So thank you for
giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions?
I can do all the motions. You want to take a shot at it?
I'll make a motion that we nominate Sakuichi and Chieko Matsumoto residents to the Hawaii Historic Register. Register of Historic Places.
Also for national?
Yeah.
Or recommend?
And recommend it for the National Register. Historic.
Under criterion C.
Under criterion C.
Second.
Nick seconds. Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, you've done a wonderful job preserving the building.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Lovely house.
I thought it looked almost like a house museum.
That's so, yeah.
Okay. Make a vote to place the Matsumoto residence. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Quick break. Yeah. Let's say, and if everybody wants to eat your lunch, does anybody want any more than 10 minutes? Anybody like 15, 10? You good with 10 minutes?
I'm going to see what they have for a sandwich next time.
Look at me.
I'm looking at him.
He's looking at me. Five is good for me.
Let's take 10 because then you can eat.
10 minutes? I'm going to eat my donut.
So we'll be back at
I guess.
Okay.
Are we all ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Restart. Okay. Go ahead, Don.
This nomination is for a Chinese cemetery, the Yi King Tong, which is on Owyolima Road behind Punch Bowl. Its significance dates is 1889 when it was initially established, then in 1935 when it was modified with the building of Owyolima Road. We're nominating it under criterion C at the local level as a good example of a Chinese cemetery developed in Hawaii during the late 19th century and remaining active into the present century. It's typical of its period and its design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. It includes a number of distinctive features, including a bone house. It's also significant under criterion A for its associations with the Chinese. This is a little map I pulled out of the newspapers where you can see the dark line. That is where the new roads went in 1935 to connect Manoa to Nu'uanu Valley. The cemetery is up here. Go, please. Sorry. Okay, the cemetery is in two sections. The lower section, the original cemetery, is an L shape, like this. These are different cemeteries that are not part of the nomination. Also, the property runs down further. You can see the last burials are here. Then there's a house which is on the property, which a Hawaiian family lives in, and they're the caretakers. They're taking care of the cemetery. So the houses are not included in the nomination. Also, in addition to this, when the road went in, they took part of the cemetery road, and in return, they gave the cemetery this parcel of land, which is also part of the nomination. Here's another view. You can see the older section and see the bone house in the upper center of the picture. Here's the other cemetery across the street. The stone walls all went in with the new road. And here's that cemetery. Here's a view looking down from that cemetery to the older one with the bone house. The bone house is a nice little classical revival house building from 1935. When they disinterred remains, they either reburied or sent them to China or they put them in the bone house. And that's it. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
What year was the road put through?
1935. I do have a question, but my mouth is full of potato chips.
We can wait.
Now, this takes me back, but I remember 20 years ago, 15 years ago, Ken Hayes did a nomination.
Oh, yes.
And he wanted not to include the cemetery, but to nominate the parcel for its association with Queen Liliuokalani's flower garden. And I think we said it had to include the cemetery too, right?
Yes, I remember what you ended up saying.
I think we didn't allow. We didn't do it. Because he said it would take so much more work and analysis to do the cemetery that he couldn't possibly do that.
Different cemetery.
It's right
next to it. If you go back around three slides, next one. Here, the Queen Liliuokalani Gardens this area up here.
No, I don't think it got listed yet.
I'm not sure.
No, it's on the state register.
I don't think
it made it.
That was my question. It's been answered. So thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, my understanding was that it was on the other end. It's on the end. It's closer to the road going up to the cemetery.
There's a sign in the area that yeah. Don indicated. There's one of the
there's
signs
like
with the
sign
Kamehameha image,
photo, like right here,
marking a historic site.
This is the site that was listed, and the garden used to be. I think the garden area used to be larger. That whole area used to be crowded.
I think that's what he said, that, but we didn't have any documentation or anything. So,
but I think Don has identified that this parcel, I think, was deeded before that garden was established around the time when she was in prison.
Right.
The cemetery goes back before that.
A question.
Okay.
I just remembered there was this thing with the overlapping cemetery and garden.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? Okay. Anybody like to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that the Yi King Tong Cemetery be listed on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places and national or non-national? Yes, and recommended for the national list as well.
Thank you.
On the criteria A and C.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Bill.
Look at the easy job.
Any further discussion? All in favor of placing this on the state register and recommending it to the national register. Okay, great. Thank you, Don.
There is a criteria exception, right?
Yes, there is. I did include that. In the for the design, not Murray Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next we have the Homolani residents. You're up.
Hi. I'm Brad Jenks, the owner of this house. So welcome to Lush and Lahu Nu'uanu. That's 1900 minutes old. The Omalani house is right at the end of Omalani, which is in the Dowsa Track.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the middle of the Dowsa Track, actually. So as you go to Pali, you hit Dowsa, then you hit Wood, and then you hit Omalani, and then you hit Dowsa again. So it's a dead end street. And you can see it there circled in yellow. It really was an interesting process to figure out when the house was built. But fortunately, we found the 1927 Sanborn Fire Insurance maps show that it was built in about 1926. All the records in the county and the state show was built in 1941. So it was kind of interesting. However, the significant dates were 1926 and 1941 when the renovation took place. We'll talk about with Albert Eli Ives. There's the north face of it, the eastern side, and then we have the west side with the garage, and that's the south side up top. And that is the floor plan. The first floor, one of the things we'll show is that when we bought, the house is really interesting because it was, history goes, built by the Edmondson family in 1926. They went through the renovation of the Albert Eli Ives in 1941. And then after the war, they sold the house. It seems like it was the Edmondson family. They moved to Lanikai. And then Cyrus Yee and his wife She thought it. He was a doctor of ophthalmology at the Territorial Hospital. She was a teacher. They moved out of the house in 1990 and went to the Punahou Gardens, and it really kind of vacant for almost 15 to 20 years. And it went into some severe decline. So here's the front of the house. Gable roof with a shed roof. It is, since we purchased it in 13, it was not inhabitable. So we had to re-roof it, replumb it, rewire it, etc. So we maintain the integrity of the house from the beginning. This is the other angle. You can see the front door there with the side lights, casement windows with transom windows above them, which is really fabulous because the trays come right down that direction. And the original house is posted here with some lava rock. And let's see, this side. 1941, Albert Ives really kind of redid the entire house, we think. He added this chimney, and if you can see the bottom left of the chimney, that's actually a window in the chimney, which is kind of unique. The first floor has this case of one of those transoms, and the second floor has double hung windows that they're all original. And those little windows are in every closet, which is fabulous. So it keeps the mildew away. You can see where the original house was, and then that addition there, which took place in 41, is the lanai, which you'll see in another photo. This is up the south side, showing that it's definitely on a significant hill. The card of the eastern side of the property is Kapohipa Stream, which protects the property from the houses on the Alika side. So it's really kind of interesting. Having been around there, I actually dug up a pool of microstone and a couple other artifacts, which are nice find for us. The western side is the garage, which is once again was built in 41. Or the original, if we went back to the Sanborn slide, see that it was in the corner of the property. Maybe it was a horse. Stable, whatever, but so this is built in 41, and that is the western side. You can see it's the same. The rafters have the extra supports, and see the bent at the peak of the house. If you go in the attic, you see that same thing. I think that's so when obviously the chimney was added, it was closed off. This is the north side of the garage, two double hung windows. In the garage, it really ties very nicely to the rest of the house. The house, the exterior is all staggered shingle, all original. You know, it's just early colonial revival craftsman shingle style. This is the window in the kitchen, which is once again the same as the front, transom windows, and all original hardware, original windows. You really kind of reconditioned everything. Off the dining room, which connects to this lanai area, these are sliding doors, semi-pocket doors. And once again, it's all original. This particular slide shows the angle of the house, the detail of the craftsman. I wouldn't have added this slide, but a number of years ago, Nancy Peacock, who you probably all know, she said, "Well, this is really significant, Brad." So I said, "Okay, so there you go." We actually had a house on Dowsett. We moved in 1984. It was put on the register, I think, sometime in the 80s by Bob Bacher. But this was obviously the same era as that house. This is as you come in the front door, this entry hallway, a nice arched hallway. To the left is the living room. To the right is the dining room. Straight through is the lanai that was exterior, but we screened it in. And so the light fixture is actually original, both of those. kept everything. This is the staircase, the original staircase, went to the second floor. You can see the great artwork there of my grandchildren. And
it's not Matisse then.
Yeah, they're getting better all the time. So you can see what you get there. This is the living room. Since we've had it, we've added a mantle to the fireplace. We added the bookcases to the left and right. All the floors are original. It's all fur. We're fortunate to have to keep that all in place. This is same shot of the living room from the enclosed lanai. On the enclosed lanai that we screened in, one of the things unique on that is that it's about 20 feet long, but there's not one joint in the floor. They're all one piece away, which is pretty impressive to me. This is the dining room. Once again, see the same type of ceiling. This is the door that slides out to the lanai area. To the right, of course, the same casement windows and transom windows. Original floor. This is the kitchen. And this was in 13 when we bought the house. You can see the, I'm trying to think of the name of the company that had this built out and all that stuff, but it's all built into the stainless steel. We thought we were going to have to rip out the entire kitchen because it was really, but fortunately we got Alakai Chemical came in and they were able to recondition the stainless steel, and which is about a quarter inch thick, with beveled edges. So we were able to keep it. This is Albert Ives' kitchen. So you can see it's almost identical. The same details. And here's the kitchen today. So we were able to keep the countertops, all the cabinets. The hardware in this kitchen is new. Floors, we had actually had a linoleum type thing on there. We were able to take it off, and the fur flooring was under it, which we maintained. So it was real kind of a labor of love. We enjoyed the house greatly. And I guess that's it. So probably a lot of stuff. I have never given a presentation to this group, so please ask me questions on it.
You did an excellent job. So well done.
We have criteria A, which I guess is Dowsett area, the history of that, going back to James Dowsett and that group. And the C is obviously the we're really fortunate that Albert Ely Ives, who did Washington Place, who did Hotel Hana, a whole bunch of places we had. And the thing I also learned that the Dillingham Fountain down by Castle Sir Oaks Club, the Dillingham, he actually designed that also, which is he was pretty
quick. We've seen his stuff around the house in Diamond Head listed that time.
Yeah.
What is your background?
What's my background? Mm-hmm. I was in the hotel business. I first moved over here in the 70s. I was the general manager of the opening of the new Kali Kalani. I was the vice president of Argonne Hotels. I ran the Intercontinental in Maui. I was the vice president of Hilton Hotels, Intercontinental Hotels. I retired from Ritz-Carlton in 2013. Came out of retirement in 14 and ran the Wailea Country Club for 3 years. Came out of retirement again in 18 and was mentored the new general manager for the Outrigger Canoe Club. So I retired 3 times. I think it's time to stick this time.
Yeah. The reason I asked, many of these are done by having people who are architects do the nomination. So I was very impressed.
I'm very impressed too. You can come out of retirement, set yourself up as a preservation consultant doing nominations.
It's kind of interesting. My career in the hotel industry, I've had about $1 billion of construction, but not, so I have a kind of a basic understanding. And I'm originally from Rhode Island, so it's kind of colonial, it's kind of in my blood, I guess.
But a lot of people don't get the criteria and all that stuff, and you did perfectly well with that, so.
We've been sitting on this for a couple of years, and finally I said, gee, I got time to do this.
It's a beautiful house.
Yeah, we're really happy with it.
So how many hours did it take you to complete this, do you think, overall?
This
the nomination or the
nomination?
Probably 80 hours. maybe at that's least
a good amount too.
At least I don't
that's
know,
what they say is tier one. I was looking at it recently, isn't it? 60 hours tier one.
I don't know. I mean, I started
tier three is like 400 hours.
Well, Mary's very helpful. When I first filled this out, it was evidently the old form, so that's how long I've been doing it. I have no idea how long it's been, but anyway, here we are.
Once again, a very, very good job on this.
Oh, thank you. Any other questions? Come and visit if you'd like.
Oh, what was around the fireplace before you put the new one in?
It was the fireplace was there. It was actually no mantle.
No mantle.
Just flat, and so it was pretty boring. So adding the mantle and the details.
Do you think that was an Ives innovation, removing the mantle, give it a little modern look or something?
I don't know. It didn't seem because in that hallway, we staircase to the left with all built-in shelves there, which kind of tied into what we did in the living room. So I don't know. Maybe they ran out of money.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house. So.
Are you able to find the drawings from either the original drawings or the renovation in the 40s?
No.
How were you able to confirm that it was Ives? Was that just...
Well, it was interesting. Well, the kitchen really put me clearly, over the top. Yeah. But when we bought the house, it's interesting. The Yees, when we bought it there, we bought it from their remaining daughter who was in California. And we wanted to know the history of the house. And they just chose not to give us any information. Because I think it was an event. There was homeless in there. There was all sorts of stuff that was taking place in there over about a 15, 20-year period. And so I think they just... John, I think I was surprised that it was there. We were happy it was there. Surprised it wasn't torn down.
Yeah.
And so it's.
So you heard about Ives where? How did you know that
they mentioned it when it was listed? it's actually, I don't want to worry with the story, but somebody used to live in Dowson, and I was transferred to Mainland a couple of times. So my wife was back, and we were looking at places, and she said, I don't know what happened to that house down there. So it was his first sale sign. It was totally covered in vines.
Wow.
Anyway, long story short, we bought it.
From the old building permits,
will indicate
who the architect was. If they
They sometimes do name their architect, even though they don't have the drawings. They don't have the contract. They don't have
the drawings, but they use the form.
The kitchen probably always have, for sure.
Well, and you're looking more, you guys may have been using it for a while, but I've only recently started using newspapers.com, and it's just amazing. If you subscribe, you can find all sorts of stuff. So. In the future, when you're set up your consulting business.
Yeah, right. But I remember the cooktop there in the kitchen was Thermador.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it should be in the Smithsonian. So anyway, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Well, now we got to make a motion.
Yes.
So I'll move that the Homolani house be listed on the state register. Do you want it to go on the national register?
What do you think?
And I think so. We'll recommend that we use the same criteria. So.
Yes.
Recommend that it be forwarded to the National Register.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Under criteria A and C, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. May we vote?
Thanks very much.
Unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Thanks for sitting through all the rest of it.
I learned a lot. Thank you, Mary.
Yes.
Yep. Again, the Mackay Golf Course, which was next on our agenda, has been deferred, and so now we move on to the fountain at St. Andrews.
Oh, it's been about an hour left. This rate.
That's not that runner come in. I said, "Oh man, they're not going to want to give us the church road about the fountain."
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they
break between this.
No, the one I decided they was a letter saying that they wanted it.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
You mentioned something about whiskey.
It was the pastor or the rector or whatever they have.
You guys, thank you. Yes, yeah. We're ready.
So much better.
Whenever you're ready.
So again, the speakers, that's only for recordings. So. Okay. How close does it need to be to there?
Is this fine? Right here?
That's fine. Yes.
Okay. I only have multiple hands. All right. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Mary Brown.
and I'm an old Kamaaina family. And I'm speaking to this because this fountain of St. Andrews was a gift from my grandparents. And, you know, like many people of Hawaii, we grew up with a love for that fountain. And we played by it. My brother walked by it every day of his life. You know, and just on his way to work. And he would like to speak to it at the very end. We also have, where did she go? Corinne, she'll be back. She would like to speak a little bit too, if we have time. But I've been told by my brother to be very respectful of their time. Busy schedule and so busier ones to come.
We have an hour.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to answer any questions that you have. I also have a background in art history. This was a brand new experience, and I think I spent well a lot more than 60 hours because I just couldn't figure out the nomenclature. It's like, oh, crud. But I'll do the best that I can. So what I'd like to do is, I think I'm ready. You know, I'm not going to read much, but going back to that slide there. Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank you for your kukua and your interest in this. Hawaii, as you know, is a very unique and special place. And the Fountain of St. Andrews has been a focal point for so many things. I don't need to tell you that. You're all experts in your field. The fountain is the basic atrium outreach of the cathedral. But what is interesting is I'd like to see it nominated under two criteria. I'm asking this to be done as a contributing object to the Cathedral Church of St. Andrews. It's already part of two historic districts, and I think it's in the National Registries as well. But in recent years, it seems like the history has been lost. And so I've had access to the letters of the Andersons, the artists, the sculptors, the architects. They're all held at University of Notre Dame. And I just have an interest in that sort of thing as an art historian. And I have these records. And it's a wonderful, wonderful story. So that was my goal, was to get this on record. And then, so I'd like to do it under criterion A. Probably the first reason why is because when Carlton Winslow was asked to design the new facade for the church, it was during Kennedy's tenure as bishop. And they'd had so much destruction during World War II, termites had eaten away the main facade. And so he employed Carlton Winslow, who was a well-known architect in postmodern World War II architecture, to plan that new facade, the metal and steel facade. And as you guys are all architects, you recognize, you know, the elements that went into that. At the same time, the Andersons, who had lived in the islands all of their adult lives and had great love for it and been very involved in the community, and by the way, that's all in the thing, is they wanted to give something back. Hawaii was their home, and they loved it. You know, their kids were raised in Nu'uanu, their grandchildren. In fact, I was christened the day this was done. The guys was unveiled. Their great-grandchildren now, one of which is there. But it's not about our legacy. It's about the beauty that this fountain brings to Hawaii. And, my grandfather arrived on the islands with basically, I think, a few cents in his pocket off a ship. He was the son of a poor minister. And he had a promise of $3 a day, you know, as a job. And he just graduated law school. And so he went into one of the local lockup firms. And he did so much with Hawaiian land law. And my dad followed suit. I don't know if any of you guys know Paige Anderson, but he did a lot of work with consulting with the legislature in recent years, you know, before he passed away, about how to deal with these, because they had such a rich history here. They loved these islands. And, you know, their families have been Kamaaina since. And they just wanted to give it back. So even though we have this postmodern, sort of post-World War II architectural style, Carlton Winslow